miles away in Canada. Canada, in Windsor, right? I always say, south of us. They go, wait a minute, isn't Canada north of you? No. A little geographic hook there puts Canada to the south of us. So when we go to Canada from Detroit into Windsor, we go south. All right, here's our phone numbers, 313-298-WRIF. Call talkyes at yahoo.com if you want to email. Call talkyes at yahoo.com. If you're even considering having me read it on the air, please make it short. Roth Dizzy will be our producer and phone screener for tonight. So when you call 313-298-WRIF, he will be the first voice you will hear. Let's see. Oh, yeah. Calltalkyes at yahoo.com. My website, peterwerbe.com. PETERWERBE.com. Lots of good stuff on there. I'm not bragging. I simply copy it and place it there. But it sort of fleshes out in many ways what we're talking about here. You know, I almost fell for it. I almost did. I was just loaded for bear for these right-wing Christian conservatives. And I almost fell right into their trap because, you know, how they're into this whole thing that Christmas is under attack, the plot against Christmas and Christmas under siege. Suddenly it's everywhere. And it's, you know, it might as well be the old Soviet Union where the party, the Communist Party, the ruling dictatorial institution said, here's what's going to be in the party papers. The national ones were what? Pravda and Izvestia. Pravda meaning truth, Izvestia meaning right out of my brain. You may want to email me. Don't call and tell me. But if you, what's Izvestia, the old Soviet paper, calltalkyes@yahoo.com. But Bill O'Reilly, he says, all over the country, Christmas is taking flak in Denver this past weekend. No religious floats were permitted in the holiday parade there. I mean, lying, of course. He lies about everything. Every time Bill O'Reilly opens his mouth, it's a lie. It's a damn lie, and beginning with the fact that he is only representing the average person, that he has no politics. Well, he's a far right-wing conservative, and Sean Hannity, you know, he's in there with all this stuff as well, and it goes on and on and on and on and on. Everywhere you look, there's, and the New York Times, does Christmas need to be saved? Like somehow it is under assault by these great hordes of pagans and atheists and people of other religions like
Muslims, Jews, Hindus, Sikhs, Jains, Confucians, Taoists.
You know, I mean, it just ain't there. This is another deal that these wackos on the right have dreamed up to make them appear as though they are this embattled minority, that they have this religion that is under constant assault, that they're suffering these great waves of prejudice because of their Christian religion. And it's just a lot of crap. Just totally. I mean, I know this sounds a little vulgar, but they are, I mean, they're always causing trouble. I mean, just when you think maybe something a little calm down and people won't be so nuts about everything, there they'll just open up some other can of worms. And I almost fell for it, or am I falling for it by continuing to talk about it now? This was a good article in today's New York Times. I reach now, and I get the Sunday Times. Yeah, it's this huge thing. I think it costs about $4 or $5 or something like that. But, you'd think you'd go to the news section or the weekend review section or something like that. I reach for the arts section and read Frank Rich's column. And you could probably read it lots of other places. One of the things, if you go to nytimes.com, it asks you to register. And it's pretty easy. And, you know, they don't sell you anything or anything like that. They don't put you on any list. But he calls 2004 the year of the passion. And he's talking about this whole phenomenon. You'd think peace might reign in a nation where there's so much unanimity of faith. You know, everybody's got the same one, according virtually, where everyone claims that they're Christian. In Newsweek's Birth of Jesus holiday cover article, not to be confused with Time's competing Secrets of the Nativity cover, a poll found that 84% of American adults call themselves Christian. Do I know only the 18%? Is that it? Probably. 82% see Jesus as the Son of God. Again, I must know the 18%. 79% believe in the virgin birth. Yet if you watch the news and listen to certain politicians, says Frank Rich, especially since Election Day, you'll hear an ever-growing drumbeat that Christianity is under siege in America. I mean, how could that be? In fact, he says, in the latest and most bizarre twist on this theme, even Christmas is now said to be a target of the anti-Christian mob. Are we going to abolish the word Christmas? Asks Newt Gingrich. And Frank Rich asks, if more than 90% of American households celebrate Christmas, you have to wonder why the guy is whining. The only evidence of what Pat Buchanan has called Christmas season hate crimes against Christmas consists of a few ridiculous and isolated incidents. What's it all about? This is key. This is absolutely key to it all. How can those in this country's overwhelming religious majority maintain that they are victims in a fiery battle with the forces of darkness? It's certainly not about actual victimization. In other words, nothing is really happening to them. But it's answered somewhat in the Times' article, Does Christmas Need to Be Saved? Of course, for many conservatives, this controversy is not just about Christmas. That's where it all is. It's not just about Christmas. They get you off focus from the real issues that are important in this country. The two biggest ones being this ongoing disaster in Iraq, and the second thing is the state of the economy that allows the rich to keep getting richer and the middle class and the working class and the poor to keep losing ground all the time. That's what it's all about. I mean, I don't know that it's not like it's a conspiracy. In a way, it's a conspiracy of men that never meet. I mean, they know what to do. And you know, half of the people you know, generating this stuff are rabid. I mean, they're just insane. They're mad. They don't like peaceful situations. If there's nothing going on, they're the people that if it ain't broke, they try to fix it. Let's see here. It's not just about Christmas. It's a way to talk about a whole float of issues. Bill O'Reilly warned viewers that the store clerks no longer saying Merry Christmas foretold the imminence. In other words, the sudden or the soon coming of a brave new progressive world where gay marriage, partial birth abortion, and legalized drugs run rampant. That's all on the agenda, isn't it? I mean, see, it's going the other way. The brave new progressive world where everybody gets along, where everybody has tolerance and sense of generosity towards everyone else, rather than this pinch-faced busybodies trying to control everybody else and having this government that starts wars all around the world. You know, so don't worry, you still have that. Freedom Forum's First Amendment Center, which I'm not sure if they're right wing or left wing. Some people see this as a marvelous opportunity to heat up the culture war. Well, it's not some people, it's the right wing. It's not like the left wing is ever saying, what can we shove down the throat of people? That's never happening. It's always the right wing trying to shove their stuff. I gotta watch my mouth, man. I get mad. I guess you can even say stuff like that now, can't you? I can't. I'm old school on that. Anyways. So they're the ones that are always trying to shove stuff down our throat. He says it's an opportunity to trigger deeper emotion and frustration that are not really about Merry Christmas, but what kind of country we are. And it can be all sorts of different countries and all sorts of different homes and all sorts of different TV channels and all sorts of different music. But these fascists on the right, these right-wing Christian conservatives who want this theocratic militaristic empire, want all of us goose-stepping to their call. Sorry, pals, it ain't a-gonna happen. Well, I don't know. Maybe that's what the left and decent people said in Germany as well. Because you got to remember, the Nazis in Germany, they weren't the majority. They got about a third of the vote in the last free election. But they were able, by their organization and by their obsession with power over people, not the power to do things in the world and transform the world for good, but power over people, rule. That's what they're all about. I mean, they talk about freedom, they talk about family values, it's all a load of crap. And I'm not even necessarily talking about, you know, sometimes I get nice emails, probably maybe nicer than what I, a nicer response in what I'm putting out from conservatives that say, well, you know, I'm really not like that, and I do good work in the community and all that. And I'm not even talking about you. I'm talking about the Bill O'Reillys. I'm talking about the George Bushes and these neocons around them, these family forums or whatever the hell they are. Those are the people that are causing so much problems in our country. the Alliance Defense Fund Christmas Project radio ads demonize the American Civil Liberties Union, insisting that it's okay to say Merry Christmas. The ACLU never said it wasn't. So it's supposed to be, right, this Christian holiday, but get it. I mean, think about it. First off, they don't like it. Like, I'm not a Christian. I'm not religious at all. Zero. I don't believe any of those things that everybody else seems to, or at least that they tell pollsters. But in any event, I mean, that's my deal. It's none of yours, and yours ain't none of mine. Well, I mean, you know, we can talk, and you go, hey, Pete, you were right after all. Or maybe, you know, at some point I'll say, yes, I just came to me like Paul, was it Saul on the road to Damascus, hit with an epiphany from above. But I doubt it. But in any event, that's my business. But see, that's it. That these folks on the right, they want to get into my business. You know, they don't want me to say this on the air. Yeah, probably my boss will probably get 10 emails tomorrow. People that won't call up 313-298-WRIF and talk to me directly and say, you know, I don't agree with you. Here's what I think is happening. Da, da, da. What they want to do is shut me up. Pure fascism. Fortunately, I have bosses that always have supported me. And when they get, actually, we've never had 10 emails. But if there were six, he'd say, what were you saying last night? Well, one thing I'll say to you is happy holidays. I'm not going to say Merry Christmas. I never do. I never have in the history of this program. And this program goes way back to the dawn of rock and roll. All right? And I'll always say happy holidays. But think about it. What is the root? What is the root of holiday? It's like holy day, right? Okay, so what do you want? What you, I mean, you can say Merry Christmas to me, and people call up and they say, I pray for you. I say, thank you. I appreciate that. I think some of, most of the only, I don't even know any real right-wing Christians or anything like that. I just read the mess that they make of America. All the Christians that I know are liberal, progressive, involved in peace and social justice, and they've never said it, but I suspect some of them pray for me. Or maybe they don't. I don't know. Maybe they don't. But they might. They might. But anyways, this is, on one hand, taking this off focus, because the real stuff of our life gets twisted around with all of this. Hey, someone sent me this, Janet from Huntington Woods. Huntington Woods is upscale neighborhood, but they voted, I think, about two-thirds for Kerry. Anyways, there's going to be this inauguration. Remember I was talking about this last week, this totally militarized spectacle. That ought to be canceled. They ought to just have, you know, bring Bush in a room and have Rehnquist, if he's okay, just say, you know, do whatever you wear to uphold your constitutional duties. Okay, you're the president. But they're making this inauguration into a coronation. It's going to cost $45 million. Remember that other stuff that I said along with it? This is at a time where the number of hungry is rising, not only worldwide, but in the United States. So this is $45 million that could help the poor. And in fact, there are millions and millions of children that are hungry, that go to bed hungry or go to bed at risk of hunger the next day in the United States. And it's getting worse. And so these greed heads and power freaks that run our country politically and financially are going to dump $45 million on this militaristic spectacle that is such at risk that they're going to have battle-ready battalions of Marines around. And, of course, what this is all about is just saddling up to the hog so they can get more of our money, either directly through the government or being able to have a free hand in the marketplace. And do I wonder if I still have that deal. Oh, yeah. Remember that, that for $100,000, and any of you got $100,000? How many out there of you have ever made $100,000? How many of your parents have ever made $100,000 in 1 year? Well, but not very many. Not very many. I mean, that's starting to get up towards, I think, like the 85th or 90th percentile. So maybe 85% of the people believe in virgin birth, but 85% of the people make, and it might even be more, but I don't want to exaggerate. So let's say 85% of the people make below $100,000. Tickets to all official inaugural events, including an elegant candlelight dinner with a special appearance by President Bush, $100,000. In other words, somebody's going to write the prez a check for $100,000 so he can have this obscene gala. Of course, if you've really got some money, Now, when you start getting down into this, 250,000, you're talking about getting up in the 94th and 95th percentile. This is a mere 5% of the people have a wage per year of $250,000 a year. Then you get a ticket to all official inaugural events, two additional tickets to an exclusive lunch with Mr. Bush and Vice President Cheney, plus an all-access pass to any inaugural ball. $250,000, please. Now, why would anybody want to do that? Partly vanity. You know, they always take these photographs. I got a friend of mine works for used to work for the UAW. He's got a picture of him and President Clinton. So, I mean, partly his vanity, okay? Although he didn't pay $250,000, he paid nothing. But the other thing is, it's access. It's access, because this is a government with no controls. This is going to be like the 19th century. Pretty soon they'll have 10-year-olds working again. But here, anyways, Janet from Huntington, what is it? What did I say? Huntington, Pleasant Ridge. Pleasant Ridge, I forgot which I said. Anyways, Pleasant Ridge and Huntington would also upscale. Those are people with money with a conscience. They exist. They actually exist. Isn't that funny the way they, like, people are, like, these right-wingers are dismissive of, like, Hollywood stars and people like in Huntington Woods and Pleasant Ridge because they don't vote their class interests. They vote out of a sense of humanity. They don't vote to increase their wealth, to shift the tax burden onto the middle class, that they say, hey, maybe, you know, since we're doing really well and the middle class and the working class aren't, maybe we should be paying a little higher taxes and the middle class and the working class pay a little less. Anyways. Not Republicans. This is called Things to Do Before the Inaugural. Things to do now that George W. Bush has this mandate. Mandate my ass. He did not even get 51% of the vote. There's no mandate. There's no mandate whatsoever. Forget about that stuff. Anyways, things to do before George W. Bush's inaugural. Get the abortion you've always wanted. Drink a nice clean glass of water. These are things that aren't going to be around after, obviously. Cash your Social Security check. Spend quality time with your draft-age child or grandchild. Get that gas mask you've been putting off buying. Hoard gasoline. Borrow books from the library before they're banned. Ones like constitutional law books, Catcher in the Rye, Harry Potter, Tropic of Cancer, etc. These are things to do before the inauguration of George W. Bush. Come out and then go back in. Hurry. Stay out late before the curfews start. Go see Bruce Springsteen before he has his accident. Go see Mount Rushmore before the Reagan edition. Start your school day without a prayer. These are things you want to do before the inauguration. Pass on secrets of evolution to future generations. Learn French. Attend a commitment ceremony with your gay friends. Again, what to do before the inaugural. Take a factory tour anywhere in the U.S. Try to take photographs of animals on the endangered species list. Visit Florida before the polar ice caps melt. Visit Nevada before it becomes radioactive. Visit Alaska before the big spill. Those are on my website as well. You can go down to the bottom of it, the long list. That's at peterwerby.com, PETERWERBE.com. Phone number 313-298 WRIF, call talkyes at yahoo.com. Rough, dizzy, busily. Dude, you're in the dark. I can't see you. Hold up a finger. Let me tell you. Was that nice? Okay, four? Line four? All right, you're going to have to put some light on in there. We're going to move next week, is it? It's all computers and all this. No more of this holding up the fingers. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Welcome to be our first caller.
Hey, Pete, how you doing tonight?
A little cranked. Other than that, I'm pretty good.
I just wanted to wish Jesus a happy birthday. I hope that's okay. Is that okay?
I don't care what you do.
All right. No, I'm just saying. I want to. I do like to say that pointing out George W.'s shortcomings. I commend you for it because I do think he has a lot of shortcomings, and it's possible he's a bad man. You know, just because you say you're a good person doesn't make your actions speak louder than your words.
We should say happy birthday to Mithra as well, because Mithra was also born in a cave on December 25th. He was popular a few thousand years before Jesus and essentially had the same story. Born of virgin birth, came, so the myth or the story was identical.
Oh, well, I'd like to wish that person a happy birthday, too. Mithra, right?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah. Happy birthday. Okay, I mean, happy birthday to anybody. Right. And why?
Well,
go ahead.
I'm sorry. A few weeks ago, you had said that Saddam Hussein had a place in hell. Or not Saddam Hussein, but Bin Laden.
Yeah, well, I mean...
And then the caller after that was saying, well, he was trying to make the point that if you don't believe there's a heaven for Peter, then you shouldn't believe there's a hell for Bin Laden.
Damn, you got a better memory than I do. I don't even hardly remember this, but go ahead.
Right. So Pete, I think you're a great guy.
But
if you don't believe there's a heaven for Pete, I don't know if you can believe there's a hell for Bin Laden. But Bin Laden's a bad man. I agree.
Well, I mean, for one thing, it's an expression. Secondly, Mark Twain said heaven for the climate and hell for the company. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Okay. Here are the weirdos are coming out of the woodwork. Calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Steve writes in, and I was talking about these conservatives trying to shove things down our throats. He says, what about all your gay crap? You know, I've been married to a woman for a long time. I couldn't imagine any circumstances other than the saddest that I wouldn't be married any longer to my dear wife. But I'll marry a man next time. Of course, I'll burn my bra and hug a tree at the same time, as well. What about all your gay crap? Just think about this. Think of the intolerance embedded in this. And what am I trying to do, Steve? Remember, in fact, that's what these wacko right-wingers say. God created Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve. So dig that, Steve. But think about this. He means I'm trying to shove all this gay crap down people's throat by talking about it, by saying we ought to have respect and love and understanding of everybody in our community. That's what gay crap is to him. Steve, marry a woman. You know, fine. That's nice. The vast majority of union ceremonies I go to are with men and women. But, you know, if there's men and men and women and women, you know, I just saw two women I know together and who are both gay. In fact, you know, and you know what? You know how much more I would rather be around them than you? Because I know you're a mean-spirited person who I couldn't trust. All I got to see on that screen is, what about your gay crap? And I know I don't even want to get too near you. I'm just going to say, when you say, hi, Pete, I'm going to say, hi, how are you? Happy holidays, Steve, and goodbye. Because I don't think you're the kind of person I want in my community, because I can just get the hate exuding out of this. Whereas the gays in our community are friendly people. They're good neighbors. They improve their property. They take part in civic affairs. Nothing but meanness and spite there. Right? All right. Where are we going next? Line 6. Ooh. Hi, WRIF. Happy holidays. Hey, you with me, man?
Hey, I've got a question for you. I'm not really sure what's so wrong with being a Republican. I mean, I heard your list that you read off before, and I think it's kind of ludicrous. But if you could, I guess, somehow sum up to me what's so wrong with being a Republican?
Well, I think that mainly it is a party that privileges the wealthy at the expense of the middle class and the working class, for one thing. I think anybody who is making below $250,000 and vote Republican is cutting their own throat, that they have this viciousness towards people unlike them. They're incredibly prejudiced and intolerant, and although they make a big, you know, if you're the right person, I mean, you can. I guess you can't really be gay, can you? But, I mean, you know, if you're black and you have essentially white Republican politics, like Condoleezza Rice or Colin Powell or people like that, you're okay. But they have, you know, they have a very, very precise view of what it takes to be human in this country. And the other thing is they're incredible authoritarians who always want to shove down our throats things that are either unconstitutional, and when the court says that they are unconstitutional, they want to change the Constitution. They're a bunch of whacks.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, they're okay.
All right, man. I voted Republican. I I can't say I've defined myself as being part of that party, but...
Do you make over $250,000?
No, I sure don't.
You cut your throat, buddy.
I mean, I'm a working-class guy, and I'm trying to do as good for myself as I possibly can. And
well, you blew it on election day. I mean, they've got their policies are set for one and one only thing, and that's to increase the wealth of the upper class, and this is happening all along. Working class wages are going down the tubes. Middle class wages are shrinking. Debts of individuals are increasing. And all the while, the upper 10%, some, the upper 5% particularly, and the upper 1% get wealthier and wealthier and wealthier. And that wealth comes from you and me. They start wars, and then they get their buddies' companies to get all the war materiel to invade other nations. Then when we destroy it, they take our tax dollars and they give it to their buddies' companies to rebuild the place, rather than creating the kind of society that we should have here.
What's wrong with striving to become part of that upper class, though?
Hey, go for it, dude, but it doesn't work out very well because it's always the same 1% or 5%, and mostly it's families.
I mean, I'm not trying to brag here, but I'm 30 years old, and I would say I'm doing quite well for myself, considering I don't have a college education. I mean, I'm just an electrician, and I do have over $100,000 put away. I own my house. I own cabin up north. I own vacant property.
Great.
It's all because I've worked hard at it.
Well, I know. I mean, and you can do that, and I'm not trying to say that everybody in the working class or everybody in the middle class is doing poorly and doing worse. It's obvious that some people are doing better. In fact, in some ways, during the first 3 years of the Bush administration, I did, in terms of income, better than I ever did in my entire life. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't change the overall statistics. I mean, listen, are you you're in the IBEW?
No, sir.
Oh, you're an
non-union.
You're a non-union. Yeah. Okay, thank you. Vote Republican. Appreciate it. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Yeah, I'm in the union, and the last 4 years, I've made more money than I have in the previous 10 years before that under President Bush.
That'll happen.
You just contradicted yourself when you said how good you've been doing last 3 years.
Well, listen, you got to go to the overall statistics, for one thing. In the period... That occurred. I mean, sure, you and I could do that, but I can. You know, the statistics are that overall, what union are you in? What'd you
UAW.
Say? The UAW. Yeah, I mean, through a lot of overtime, but the UAW is in terrible shape right now. I mean, it could go out of business almost. It's operating at a negative cash flow every day. Its organizing drives are being rebuffed. Its costs are inflated. And there are less union workers than there's been in 100 years. And that's purposeful on the part of employers. And what they want to do is drive down wages. And so, you know, right now, and who knows, for the rest of your life and the rest of my life, you and I might do fine. We might even see our incomes increase. But that's not the overall picture.
When you say the religious right is trying to drive their thoughts and views into everybody in the country and you compare them to Nazis, that is so way off.
Really?
If a school is doing a Christmas program every year for decades, and they sing traditional Christmas music, and then all of a sudden the school district's lawyers say, the ACLU is threatening to sue us if we continue to do this. How is that driving their views into the
Two things. You're watching Bill O'Reilly too much. I mean, things like this occur hardly at all or in one place or something like that, and these guys inflate it. People are singing Christmas carols all over the country. And on the other hand, we have millions of people that that don't believe in Christmas for one reason or another. Either they're not Christian, so they're, you know, Muslim or Jewish or some of the other religions around. They're atheists or agnostic. And why should there be religious singing in secular public schools to begin with?
Why should 80% of the population quit doing something that they've been doing for decades?
Well, they're not quitting doing it. That's the myth that these right wingers that dominate the media that you dutifully look, watch, and then repeat what they say. There's no.
I'm repeating what you the poll you read earlier in your program.
No. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that there's no assault on Christmas. There's no, millions of kids are singing Christmas carols all around the country. But we don't live in a country where the majority is supposed to dominate minorities. You have public space that's supposed to be neutral.
So how is
why would I want my kids? I'm not Christian. Why would I want my kids going to school and sing Christian hymns?
I bet you there's not a school out there that would make them sing them Christian.
Oh, I know. They can just sit there looking like a toad on a stump or something like that. It just isn't the place. There's a thing called church. There's churches everywhere. People can go sing their hymns in their churches. Why do they feel the need that they have to do it in public and secular institutions? This country was set up to be secular because the founding fathers knew the danger of having the intrusion of religion into public and state life. It's poison. You want one nation under God? Go to Iran. That's how they run things there. Okay, you think that's funny? Thank you. Bye. All right, we'll be right back.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby on 101 WRIF Detroit. Our number, 313-298-WRIF. Peter will be back to take more of your calls right after this.
The Health and Fitness Show returns to the Novi Expo Center January 7th through the 9th, and you don't want to miss this one.
Meet Monica Brandt, former Miss Fitness Olympia, bodybuilder, and personal trainer for question and answer sessions and autograph signings all weekend.
Check out the Baseball Expo with former Detroit Tiger star Milt Wilcox, featuring a home run derby, speed pitch, and clinic. See judo competitions all weekend at all levels for men, women, boys, and girls. You can even participate. Call Dave at 248-489-3847 for details.
At the Health and Fitness Show, you'll see over 10,000 square feet of quality hot tubs at unbelievably low prices from Master Spas, Pool and Spa Spectacular.
Visit the Sport Court where you can win free throw competition prizes from DC Sports or test your hockey skills at the Motor City Mechanics Tent with game tickets, merchandise, and a chance to get the players' autographs. It's all under one roof at the Novi Expo Center during the Health and Fitness Show January 7th to the 9th, and admission is only $8.
Sponsored by Dr. Roche, Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan, Henry Ford Health System, AAA Travel, Michelob Ultra, the Metalodge Group, and the Better Health Store.
Okay, then. I'm here at the mall to tell people about the big year-end sales drive going on right now at your local Volkswagen dealer. And
excuse me, young man.
Yes.
I'm knitting my grandson a sweater for the holidays. You think he'd like periwinkle or sage?
I think he'd like a Jetta.
Oh, I can never knit a car.
Well, you don't have to. During the big year-end sales drive, you can lease an 05 Jetta for just $179 a month. What do you think?
I think a periwinkle turtleneck would be cute on you.
Thanks, but I have my own grandmother. So stop by during our big year-end sales drive for great deals on pretty much every car on the lot, including a Jetta GL for just $179 a month.
39-month lease, 933 required signing. Excludes taxes, license, other options, and dealer charges. Offer ends January 3rd, 2005. See your dealer or call 1-800-DRIVE-EW for details.
Test drive a new Volkswagen during the year-end sales drive. Visit VW.com for a Detroit and Ann Arbor area Volkswagen dealer near you.
Do you feel tense, edgy, and irritable? Are you under so much pressure you feel like you can never relax? Now there's a way to relax. Mellow out and feel high on life without drugs or alcohol. It's called Elatrin, the soothing natural herbal blend that gives you a calm, relaxed feeling of euphoria without a hangover or other unpleasant side effects. Elatrin helps lift tension and pressure and lets you feel worry-free, carefree, the way you feel when everything's going your way. Elatrin is non-habit-forming and helps relieve anxiety and irritability so you can feel happy, think clearly, relax, and be high on life. Call now for your risk-free confidential trial of Elatrin. 1-800-246-1758. 1-800-246-1758. Elatrin is guaranteed to work for you or your money back. 1-800-246-1758. 1-800-246-1758. Individual results will vary.
More Night Call with Peter Werby next on The Rim.
Admit it, you've always been a last-minute shopper. For you, the thrill of this season of giving doesn't start until now. Until you can see your breath as you rush to your car, arms loaded with magical packages. There's a place that wants to help you give everyone you love a Christmas they'll always remember. Oakland Mall. 1 million square feet of Christmas, where twinkling stores overflow with all the wondrous gifts you want to give, and some you haven't even thought of. Where you can get everything for everybody gift-wrapped and ready to give. Because no matter how late it is, Christmas will still be waiting for you at Oakland Mall.
Win yourself the best Christmas ever. Get $25,000 or a 2-year lease on a Ford Escape, courtesy of Elder Ford, beginning November 26. Log on to oaklandmall.com for details.
I'm here.
Justin, what a surprise.
Hey, Mrs. Patterson.
Bradley with you?
No, soccer practice.
Right, I forgot.
Thought I'd chill out here until he gets back, cool?
Sure.
Mind if I grab a Coke?
You go right ahead. You know where they are.
Hello, hello. Anyone here?
Bradley?
No, it's Matt.
Oh, hi, Matt. You know Bradley's at soccer practice.
Yeah, I thought I'd hang around here till he gets home. That cool?
Sure. Justin's in the kitchen.
Mind if I grab a Coke?
No, help yourself.
A house full of Coke is a house full of friends, so keep the place stocked. You never know when you'll need it.
You know, Bradley said he was going to be a bit late, but that you should go ahead and order a pizza or two.
Coke. Real.
It's almost time for the holidays and all those festive parties, and nothing goes better with great food and great friends than icy cold Coca-Cola. Whether you need 2-liter bottles for the party or fridge pack packages to keep the family refreshed, Coca-Cola has exactly what you need. Look for great tasting Coke in stores near you and stock up for the holidays.
I just about threw my back out the other day. There I was at our mailbox picking up a ton of Christmas catalogs. Already. Hi, this is Ray Vinson, founder of American Equity Mortgage. Once that pain in my back stopped, I got to thinking about homeowners facing the holidays with those maxed out high interest credit cards and the pain you're feeling about how you're going to pay for it all. Your holiday fund's over before you even get started. Well, I have an early present for you. Even if you have less than perfect credit, call American Equity Mortgage right now before the holidays hit. We'll guarantee you'll save hundreds of dollars every month by rolling all those high interest debts and credit card bills into one new low interest home loan with one low monthly payment. You'll have extra money you can use for the holidays. You won't be hit with big bills after the holidays, and you'll have your peace of mind back. Put the joy back into your holidays and more money back into your pocket in as fast as 7 days. American Equity Mortgage is right around the corner, right here in Detroit. 888-229-7699. 888-229-7699.
Call now for a free appraisal.
Or visit thanksray.com. Hurry, Christmas is coming.
This is Night Call, the Rasputin Talk Show. Now, here's Peter Werby.
All right, thank you very much. People getting mad at me. That's all right. I can take it. 313-298-WRIF, saying that this whole thing about an assault on Christmas is just phony, generated by the far-right wing, who are always playing the victim, even though right-wing conservatives, right-wing Christian conservatives control all three branches of government. They get a free ride in the media. I mean, for instance, Time magazine has selected Bush as the person of the year. Now, I don't have any real problem with that. And I'm not making the comparison, but back in the day, I mean, they had person of the year was Hitler, person of the year was Stalin. I mean, so sometimes it's just who played a prominent role, and Bush, he qualifies for that. But it's just a fluff piece. I mean, they could have the good and the bad in this, but instead they have an interview with his father. That's going to be a really objective look, and a profile of Bush's chief political advisor, Karl Rove. Now, if you go to my website, peterwerbe.com, peterwerbe.com, you'll see another Time magazine that someone sent me that I can't even say the word that it says. Picture of Bush, and it says, "We're effed." Yeah, so that's kind of my little parody of it all. Joe writes in the call talk, yes, at yahoo.com, that about a Homeland Security convention in Hawaii, money was spent, and it was in the millions, and it showed, this was on 2020 on Friday, showed participants on the beach snorkeling, watching the hula dancers, all at our expense. When there, they were supposed to be in meetings on how to improve Homeland Security. Well, we're being robbed all the time, and that's another reason that all this hoopla that about terrorism and militarism, why this just picks the pocket of the average person. Now, Bush was going to have this missile system in place so we couldn't be attacked by Well, I don't know who. But the first test in nearly 2 years of a multi-billion-dollar U.S. anti-missile shield failed last Wednesday when the interceptor missile shot down as it prepared to launch in the Central Pacific. This cost $85 million, this test. And the last one that they had in December 2002 misfired when the warhead also failed. So, but what goes on here? Key subcontractors are Northrop Grumman Corporation, Raytheon Company, Lockheed Martin, Orbital Science Corporation. See, these are buddies of Bush. They contribute hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars to the Republicans. And see, it doesn't matter whether or not this thing works or not. It doesn't matter. Because they've taken our tax dollars and the electrician and the other, the UAW guy that say they're making more money. Well, that taxes, though, that third that they're gouging out of our wages, this all goes to these folks, whether this little toy of theirs that'll never work, that'll never, ever work, they'll never make a missile shield, it doesn't matter because they've shifted. This is wealth transfer, friends. People that are dumb enough to vote for Republicans. I mean, if you head Northrop, yeah, what the hell? You better vote for them. They're giving you all this money. But if you're like these guys, these hard-working guys, they're stealing money from you. This is a loot fest. This is a crime family that's taking our money and giving it to the already wealthy. We're not getting anything back for it. And do you think they're going to say, well, what the hell, Northrop Grumman and Raytheon and Lockheed Martin, you guys didn't do very well. We're firing you. You're out of here, dudes. No, they'll just get the next contract. Well, let's see. Let's go back to the drawing boards. In the meantime, let's just keep soaking up the taxpayer money. Where else does our money go? Well, we don't even want to talk about the $200 billion of our taxpayer dollars is down the rat hole of Iraq, along with the deaths of hundreds of thousands of people. That includes Iraqis and our soldiers as well. But the Bush administration has spent more than $65 million in the past 2 years to aid political organizations in Ukraine, paying to bring opposition leader Viktor Yushchenko to meet U.S. leaders and helping to underwrite exit polls indicating he won last month's disputed runoff election. U.S. officials say the activities don't amount to interference in Ukraine's elections, as Russian President Vladimir Putin says. Well, sure sounds like we are. And the gangsters that are running Ukraine would best be gotten rid of. But is that where our $65 million should go? When we have hunger in the United States? Where we haven't met our needs? You know, the Eminem video, Mosh? Where they talk about no war for oil, we've got our problems here on our own soil. That's where the money should go. This is where all our money's going. And this this crooked, corrupt moron that was head of the New York police that Bush appointed to be head of the Homeland Security, then turned out he said, well, he didn't report his nannies, whatever. That's not what's going on. What's going on is that he made $6.2 million that he received from a company that sold stun guns to the department, to the Homeland Security Department. So they're making a fortune. Now, why would the Homeland Security Department need $6.2 million? I'm sorry, that's his profit. So how many millions of dollars of our tax money have gone to buy stun guns for the Homeland Security Department that benefit corrupt creeps like this Carrick that Bush wanted to be head of Homeland Security to protect us? So they rob us and put in these corrupt creeps. Well, ain't that swell. Let's go back to our phone calls. 313-298-WRIF. Hi, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, what's up, dude? How's it going, man?
Yeah, I was going good. Sorry.
Excellent. Hey, one thing I had to, you know, I wanted to make a comment about was that, you know, I lived in Russia for about 9 years, dude.
Really?
Like, one thing you just made a comment about.
Yeah.
And it really makes me, like, interested about the things you were just talking about was about how America, it almost seems like everybody, like how we always stick our noses in everybody else's business.
Yeah.
You know, the thing that really kind of like pisses me off is that it's like, it seems like we never know when to quit. And the thing that's really strange is that, like, what you're talking about was that, you know, how we're always trying to make things, you know, we're trying to influence everybody else when it seems like, you know, like we should really stop and think about like what we're doing at the time.
Well, let me just ask you to think about the pronoun you're using, we. I mean, that sort of takes into account all of us, all of the citizens, including the political apparatus. But the political apparatus is in service to the economic apparatus. So it ain't a we. It's really they at the top that are making elite decisions that benefit the elite of this country. And if it means that over 1,300 Americans get killed, 10,000 get horribly wounded, if it means 100,000 Iraqis get killed, well, that's just too bad.
Well, you see, the thing about like what you're saying, which is absolutely correct, is that, you know, like one of my best friends just joined the Army, and I was like, dude, you know, if you go and you have to, you know, you have to fight for your country, do it. But, you know, to be honest with you, I disagree with what's going on. But at the same time, you know, like at the same time, I voted for Kerry, not for Bush, you know, and that's totally, like, in my opinion, opposite of my entire family, which is totally cool. But I mean, the thing that I have a hard time with viewing is that, you know, seeing how everybody sees their country and trying to consistently fight for their country when they don't fight for morale and they don't fight for what they believe in, and they always seem to flock to whatever everybody else believes in.
Well, fortunately, right now, the majority of people think that entering the war in Iraq, it was a mistake. And it certainly, well, it was more than a mistake. It was based on a lie. I mean, Bush and all the rest of them knew there were no weapons of mass destruction. Why in the world that the people that made these absolutely catastrophic mistakes return to, or return to office is so far beyond me. But thank you very much. I appreciate your comments. 313-298-WRIF. This from the New York Times today. In the latest sign of strains on the military from the war in Iraq, the Army National Guard announced on Thursday that it had fallen 30% below its recruiting goals in the last 2 months and would offer new incentives, including enlistment bonuses of up to $15,000. So that's, you know, who's paying that? You and me. So we got to pay desperately poor people that are going to be lured into the Army by this extra stipend of $15,000. Say, well, what the hell, it's not too much. But in addition, the head of the National Guard Bureau said on Thursday that he needed $20 billion to replace arms and equipment destroyed in Iraq and in Afghanistan or left there for other Army and Air Guard units to use. Now, what that means is they're going to put in more orders to, like, the Carlyle Group and all the, you know, Bush's father's company, that will then be able to make extraordinarily high profits off of this war of total misery, of total destruction, of something that's spiraling downward more so every day. But in the halls of Carlyle Group and all the rest of these weapons manufacturers, there's nothing but pure delight. Because the Iraqis' misery, the American deaths and wounded, are their profits. That's how bad it is. Bob Herbert, writing in today's New York Times, says the White House seems to have slipped the bonds of simple denial and escaped into the disturbing realm of utter delusion. Did you catch this? I mean, I was looking at this, and this was unbelievable. Tuesday, there was President Bush hanging the nation's highest civilian honor, the Presidential Medal of Freedom, on George Tenet, the former CIA director, who slept through the run-up to September 11th and then did the president of the nation the great disservice of declaring it was a slam dunk that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. Another Medal of Freedom was given to Paul Bremer III, the chief civilian administrator of the American occupation, who made the heavily criticized decision to disband the defeated Iraqi army and presided over an ever-worsening security situation. Thousands upon thousands have died in this unnecessary and incompetently conducted war, yet here was the president handing out medals as if some kind of triumph had been achieved. And Bob Herbert says, if these guys could get the highest civilian award, what honor is left for someone who actually does a good job? See, in fascist structures, it doesn't matter competence or goal completion or adherence to mission statement, loyalty up the hierarchy and also the supreme leader, right? Ein Volk. What's all of it? Ein Volk, ein Reich, ein Führer. One people, one land, one leader. and retired Army colonel, 70 years old, being sent to Afghanistan. And worst and most repulsive, the guy who told everyone that we could fight the Iraq war on the cheap with just a limited amount of people, that even the Republicans now are calling for his dismissal. Rumsfeld, once a sex symbol, I guess for the constipated, given this pinch-faced look, that he did not personally sign Pentagon condolence letters to families of soldiers killed in Iraq. He used a signature stamping device instead. Isn't this all just sweet? All right, 313-298-WRIF. It's a total mess. And we, you see, one of the things is we can all ignore this. Hey, you know, just go shopping. How you doing? Happy holidays. You're on the air.
Baron von Rumsfeld would have had serious writer's cramp if he'd had to sign 1,300 letters of condolence.
I guess so.
These Republicans ought to look at the founder of their party, Abraham Lincoln. He was deeply distrustful of the military. He was deeply, deeply distrustful of corporations and said we should do everything we can to stop them.
Yeah.
And there's a book out whose author, the title and the author escaped me, but my dad mentioned it earlier in a conversation today that says Lincoln might have been gay.
Oh, that was just, I saw that in a headline somewhere.
I heard the the author interviewed earlier this year on NPR, and he's actually got letters written to the guy, and I guess it was Abraham Lincoln's law partner. They lived together for a number of years, and they've got, you know, he has letters that have very affectionate.
Well, you know, what's interesting about that, of course, is not so much whether Lincoln was really gay or not. Who cares? But it's always, it's just always a kick in the face to these hypocrites to find out that one of their icons would have been gay. But I'll tell you, when we come back, I'm going to talk about, I got time for one more call. Thank you for yours. We're going to talk a little about more about hypocrisy and drugs and unionization. But wait, I got time for one more call in this segment. Hi, WRIF, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air. Welcome.
Oh, hey, it's Joe. I just wanted to talk, like, how does Bush justify, like, against, like, gay marriages and stuff? You know, like, he's, like, how does he do it other than religious beliefs? Like, you can't just say, because he knows that all the, you know, gays, they need that for money, like, kind of stuff, and he's just doing it for religion, you know?
Well, I mean, I don't take any of the statements of religiosity from Bush seriously. I mean, he could be honest, but most of it is just playing to his base that is virulently homophobic and I'm trying to think of a word that's, you know, that's hostile towards people that aren't just like them, and they so I don't know where he justifies it. It is something. I mean, well, you know, it's akin. People have made this analogy all the time. I mean, there was a point where blacks were segregated and they didn't have rights, and during slavery they couldn't marry, and Jews under the Nazis couldn't marry, and things like that. So things march along, and they're this rear guard of the 20th century. They haven't made it into the 21st century. They're fearful of change. And it's also they don't like ambiguities. They want everything's got to be just uptight, straight, white. You know, anything goes beyond that, they get very nervous.
Yeah, and I don't understand that, because, you know, you'd think if they were Christian, they'd be loving everyone, but, and that's what Jesus preached, and they're going exactly the opposite way.
You got it. All right, thank you very much. I appreciate your call.
This is the RIS award-winning Night Call with Peter Werby. You can call in at 313-298-WRIF. Peter will return with more of your calls in just a moment.
Are you one of the millions of men embarrassed by premature performance in bed? I'm Dr. Richard Cohen, MD, men's performance specialist. Premature E is the most common of all sexual issues for men, but now you can prolong your performance and your pleasure with the free 30-day trial of Maxtrol, the new climax control system for men. Maxtrol gives you greater control during intimacy, so you can delay the urge and last longer, which means more pleasure for you and for her. Maxtrol is the confidential, non-prescription way to get the confidence and endurance you want and she needs in bed. I'm so sure of it, I'll send it to you free for 30 days.
Call now and try Maxtrol free for 30 days. You pay only shipping and handling. 1-800-270-9580. 1-800-270-9580. Call now and try Maxtrol free for 30 days. 1-800-270-9580. 1-800-270-9580.
Hey, it's Meltdown Online with my buddy Karen Newman. What's up, Karen?
Hey, Meltdown. It's holiday time, and you know what? We need to let your listeners know about Joe Panion Chevrolet's unbeatable year-end red tag sale.
That's right. Hundreds of vehicles, over 9 acres, all red tagged with unbeatable prices. Like right now, GMS employees can lease a 2005 Impala for 24 months for $118 a month with $1,600 due at signing.
Only $118 a month? Wow. Well, it's the best time to get a new Chevrolet from the dealer that's going to take the best care of you, Joe Panion Chevrolet.
And then, of course, people can roll to your holiday show December 23rd at the Blue Martini in style. Right, Karen?
That's right. I'll be taking my Suburban to the Blue Martini in Birmingham that night.
Now, do I need to go to KarenNewman.com to get my tickets to the show?
Well, you can do that, or you can call the Blue Martini at 248-258-3005. But Meltdown, I'll probably slip you in.
All right, I think I'll owe you one for that one.
Okay.
Excellent. Call Joe Panion today at 866-JOE-1111 for details on the $118 a month Impala. Joe Panion Chevrolet, right where 696 meets Telegraph. Chevrolet, an American revolution.
So you're a slot machine.
Oh, I prefer arbitrary investment return specialist.
Uh-huh. It probably surprises people to know that you talk.
And people listen.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I can be very persuasive. It's in my nature. By the way, do you think you could find it in your heart to spare a dollar?
Yeah, sure. I think I've got one.
See? Huh? Gotcha.
Boy, you were good.
It's a gift. But look, bottom line, gambling should be fun. People need to remember to...
gamble responsibly?
Exactly. As my Uncle Edgar used to say, put some balance in your life.
That's thoughtful. Advice.
That'll be $5.
Here you go.
I got you again.
A reminder that if you gamble, please gamble responsibly.
Pardon me.
To learn about the warning signs of problem gambling, you can call 1-800-270-7117. A reminder from the Michigan Department of Community Health and the Michigan Association of Broadcasters. Say, you still need that dollar?
Oh, it's just too easy.
That's 1-800-270-7117.
Stick around. More Night Call with Peter Werby. Coming up next.
Power up with Nextel this holiday season and get walkie-talkie, GPS navigation,
prepare to turn right,
and speakerphone.
Happy Holidays!
All built into your phone. Here's how to gift with Nextel. Choose from a range of powerful phones starting as low as $24.99. Add accessories, pick a rate plan, and wrap it up. And now with buy one, get one offers on our latest color flip phones, you can get one phone and keep one for yourself. So get a gift they can actually use. Power phones start at just $24.99. But hurry, these offers are only available for a limited time. Find them at a Nextel retail store near you or shop at Nextel.com. To find the nearest Nextel retail store, call 800-NEXTEL-9. That's 800-NEXTEL-9. Wrap up your holiday shopping early and get big savings at a Nextel store near you. Nextel. Done. 2-year agreement required. $200 early termination. Account setup fees, taxes, charges, and other restrictions apply. Phones by Motorola. Legal disclaimer. Done.
Give the gift of music. The iPod family has grown just in time to celebrate the holidays. With over 1 million songs available at iTunes, there's no reason to be without your favorite collection of music. No Mac or PC user should be without one. Available in 5 cool colors. Silver, gold, green, pink, or blue. iPod, there's one for everybody.
Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Now, more of your comments, questions, and opinions with your host, Peter Werby.
All right, thank you very much. We kind of slipped in a little to talking about this phony. You know, everything that the right wing puts out is phony. You know, it's all phony that that Social Security is going to be bankrupt. I mean, that's just nonsense. It's just an absolute lie, because what they want to do is privatize Social Security, turn over all these fees to their broker friends and what have you, and wind up probably cutting benefits and having to borrow enormous sums of money to cover what would go into private accounts. So, and I don't even think it's going to pass. Let me see. Where was this stuff? Oh, yeah. I said it was going to talk about drugs. Drugs, yeah. Seniors, let's hear it for them. 3/4 of older Americans support legalizing marijuana for medical use, according to a poll done by the AARP. Let me see what else is in here. Supreme Court is set to consider medical marijuana. It's going to be interesting to see what happens because the Bush administration, of course, is trying to make patients criminals, people that are using marijuana in order to help them with any kind of, with either in hospices. Remember that, the Crisco kid, John Ashcroft, the loser from Missouri, he got beat by a dead man and then they made him the attorney general. I mean, we're almost forgetting that this guy even existed. Anyways, he raided a hospice, a marijuana hospice. People were dying there. He took away their marijuana, growing it there and consuming it there. You don't want them getting addicted, right? Actually, the seniors should be told, though. I think more than half of them thought that you could get addicted to marijuana, which you cannot. You can become habituated. You can get in the habit of using it, but it's not physically addictive. Anyway, so the Supreme Court is going to consider medical marijuana. California passed the nation's first so-called medical marijuana law in 1996. Then there's a lot of other states that have it as well. This woman who brought the suit says, "I really hope and pray the justices allow me to live." She crammed a blend of a marijuana variety known as Haze X into a machine that vaporized it inside a large balloon. She then inhales the vapor, and she's got ailments that include tumors in her brain and uterus, seizures, spasms, and nausea. Well, what the hell? You can't let anybody like that smoke marijuana. Well, why wouldn't the Bush government allow that? I mean, why are they attempting to make people like this into criminals? Well, they don't ever really say, if you think about it, they don't ever really say anything about the things they don't like, about what's wrong with gay marriage. It harms traditional marriage. Yeah, like how? They can't come up with that. But I can't find where they got some attempt at it. In the meantime, our dear allies in Afghanistan have reached a record. Opium cultivation at an all-time high. So we got rid of those dreadful Taliban. Now we've got those wonderful democratic people in the Northern Alliance who are sending out more opium. In fact, it jumped 64% last year, and drug exports now account for more than 60% of the economy of Afghanistan. The rest of it, I'm sure, is, again, our money from our tax dollars. Now, I hate even to give these people publicity, but I saw this on the Drudge Report, and it says backstage controversy after NBC depiction of Rush Limbaugh. Rush Limbaugh, another one of these supreme hypocrites. Well, let me get into that I'll read this. NBC depiction of radio talk show host Rush Limbaugh passed out. Oh, I see. On Saturday Night Live, the depiction of Limbaugh passed out in vomit from drug abuse ignited backstage outrage at Saturday Night Live. The animated sketch left one senior production source stunned and outraged. Well, why? It makes it sound like it's a big deal. One guy doesn't like it. He says, would we have done this to John Belushi or Chris Farley, who also had major drug problems? Source asked not to be identified. They said, we had more effing drug addicts on this show through the years, more tragedy of lost count. The crass montage, which aired on NBC, featured Limbaugh vomiting from drugs in an apparent overdose. Last year, Limbaugh announced to his radio audience that he was seeking treatment for an addiction to pain medication. How unfeeling these New York people are. Why couldn't they be more sensitive? One of these screechers on the right said that in Rush Limbaugh, he said the left finally met a dope addict they didn't like, which is a total smear. Here's what the problem with Rush Limbaugh is. He is this monumental hypocrite. John Belushi, the late comic, and Chris Farley, did he die? Did Chris Farley die, too? Yeah, the late Chris Farley. Thank you, Ralph Dizzy, for telling me what I should have known. They didn't go around on their shows and say that anybody that breaks the drug laws ought to be slammed right in jail. They used drugs. They had a problem. They used it for recreation first, and then they couldn't deal with it. It's like alcoholism or something like that. And in that regard, we should have sympathy for Rush Limbaugh and all the other people that are addicted to whatever, because it's harmful to the body. And it shouldn't be against the law. It should be a medical problem, a social problem, not a criminal problem. The drug laws, again, another one of these things. Billions and billions of dollars soaked out of our tax dollars for something that is never going to be won ever. But it's a racket. It's part of the prison industrial complex, part of the billions spent on enforcement that is just an absolute waste of time. So we even got the, you know, this guy that makes like a third of $1 billion, Limbaugh, is just stoned out of his gourd while he's broadcasting. And while, I mean, I wonder what he thought while he was advocating strict prison sentences for people that violate drug laws. Belushi never did that. Farley never did that. That's why he is an object of ridicule and disgust and contempt, because of his monumental hypocrisy. I got to say, I think that Rush Limbaugh is the only person I ever thought ought to go to jail for drug violations. Mainly, he maybe will get a little look at what it's all about. And maybe when he would come out, like Martha Stewart and has gone to jail, maybe Limbaugh would come out chastened and say, you know, folks, I want to apologize to you for how hypocritical I've been over the years. Do you think that will ever happen? I doubt it. 313-298-WRIF. Call talkyes at yahoo.com. Website peterwerbe.com, W-E-R-B-E. And let's take another call. Hi, it's Night Call. You're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, good evening. My name's Dave, and I'm glad to get through to you. But I've heard you for the last 10 years or so. I grew up out here and moved away. I was living in the upper Michigan for a while. It was cold as hell right now. It's about 10 below here today, tonight. But anyway, I just got to disagree with you. You sound so much different to me than you did about 4 or 5 years ago when Bush was running and Bush first took office.
Why?
It seemed, I remember you making a comment that we must take, you know, whatever measure extreme to protect the safety of our United States. And I thought you were all on board. And I haven't heard you in a few years, but as soon as I turned on, I heard you talking about the missile defense system and how much of a failure it was, and that we spent $800 million or whatever on it. Or so, but that's exactly why the United States is the best in the world, is because we spend the money on it, and trial and error makes perfection.
Well, for one thing, there's no necessity for this, and the best way would be for total nuclear disarmament rather than what Bush has done, who left the Russia with 10,000 nuclear weapons that they wanted to get rid of, but it would have had to been a quid pro quo. In other words, we would have had to reduce ours as well. Rather than doing that, Bush has left these weapons in the hands of a nation that is so unstable that any time now, as you can see, this parting of the ways and this hostility beginning to reassert itself. Bush, remember one time he said Putin was his soul brother. He said he could look into his eyes and see his soul or some crap like that. In the meantime, who knows what kind of nuts could come to power in Russia. There are people there that have this idea that some of these Muslim fundamentalists, that the main enemies in the world are the United States and Israel. These are Russians now. There's a far right wing of Russians that feel like that, that they think that it ought to be Europe, a united Europe, a powerful Europe against the United States. And these are people that are going to have 10,000 missiles that Bush could have gotten rid of. Instead, in fact, one of the things, of all the 800 million, or we wish it was 800 million, the billions that have gone down the rat hole of this missile defense system, this Star Wars nonsense, that could have been used to dismantle the vast majority of nuclear weapons and nuclear technology in the world. We all would have been safer. Right now, we are still under the sword of Damocles. Remember the king that sat with the sword dangling by a thread? That's where we're at. That's thanks to George W. Bush. Thank you. We are going to line two. Thank you. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, Peter. It's Mark from Dallas. How are you doing?
Hi, Mark from Dallas?
Yes.
Oh, hi.
How are you doing? Yeah, long-time listener.
What?
Yeah, I got not angry, but irritated at the non-union electrician that called. He seemed to assert that because he's made it, you know, everybody should make it. And I just want to remind people my story. I have 2 college degrees, a bachelor's in electrical engineering, a master's in business administration. served as the Austrian United States Navy, also a commercial pilot, now unemployed 54 months, 2,500 resumes out the door, can't find a job. So, you know, just because, you know, one person calls and says that all is well doesn't necessarily imply that all is well for everyone that has worked hard in this country.
Yeah, well, and that's true. And like I say, that, you know, someone told me, gee, how come I don't vote for Bush? A couple of times I've said that I was, that in from like between 2000 and the middle of 2003. Was it you that used to listen to me when I was on the
IE America, right?
The IE American Radio Network. Well, I was getting a salary from them, and I was getting a salary here, and I was getting good union wages at the network, and I've been always rewarded generously here. I'm thinking, damn. But it never occurred to me for a second to vote for George W. Bush, because people in my tax bracket at that time would get more money. You know what I did? What so many people do with money, like Hollywood stars and a lot of people in the entertainment business. I upped my donations to people that were fighting for peace and social justice. People like Bill Gates' father, who is the president of the Bill Gates Foundation, he belongs to a group called Responsible Wealth that refuses when he gets tax breaks, he's a multimillionaire too by virtue of the stock his son has given him. He takes the money that Bush has given to the wealthy, and he takes that section of his income and donates it to groups fighting against Bush's tax cut for the wealthy.
Just to amplify this a little bit, one reason I would never vote for Bush is because his U.S. trade representative is on record as saying that Bush is going to do absolutely nothing about outsourcing. I was watching Lou Dobbs.
Wait. Anything about what?
Outsourcing.
Oh, outsourcing. Yeah,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, his U.S. trade representative is on record over in India reassuring the Indian government that the Bush administration is going to continue to support outsourcing and the loss of good American jobs. And I wonder if that electrician has ever coupled his job to somebody else's job in the sense that maybe the reason he's doing so well is that his job is not outsourceable, whereas the jobs that I have come from were outsourceable. So,
well, they used to tell you, you know, like 10 years ago when people lost their job, you should get into computers. Well,
exactly.
You did that, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I've been in high tech my whole career.
Yeah. Well, you know, people that I wasn't so surprised at someone like that. I mean, there are people that they're really a very small percentage of people that have such drive, such in sometimes luck just where they're positioned that they actually can rise in the class structure. That's very rare. Mostly we have a caste system where people stay in the class that they were born in, the rich particularly. But what really surprised me in a way was the UAW member, and I wasn't as quick with him as I should be. Bush represents, the reason that that he has the wages he did, if he's making up around $100,000, for one thing, he's working his butt off. I mean, he's working tons and tons of overtime to the point where the quality of life gets eroded, and people shouldn't have to do that. We should be able to have a decent standard of life without even having to have a union or overtime. Unfortunately, things are going the other way. That is to say, as union representation of the workforce of this country drops, so does the overall average wage. And the only reason that this guy is making the money that he does is because of the union he belongs to, the United Auto Workers, and they realized how dangerous Bush and the employers that he represents are to wage earners, because they are hell-bent to destroy all unions and to drive down the wages of the American people. It used to be that we thought the third world countries would have wage structures that rose to ours. They figured it out, though. Ours are going to lower to theirs. So it's a race to the bottom. Mark from Dallas, thank you so much for joining me on the show. Well, this is back to religion a little. Dave writes in to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. I practice Wicca, which is a recognized religion, but the religious right wants to return to the witch trials along with burning witches at the stake, while at the same time they want their religion protected and promoted. What are your thoughts? Well, I don't like people getting burned at the stakes, at a stake. Paganism, I don't know, Wicca particularly, but paganism always seemed to, if I was going to adopt a religion, I'm sure I'd become a pagan. The idea that there are so many gods protective of different aspects of life always seemed to me to make a lot more sense than monotheism. The vast majority of people, the vast majority of time on Earth, people spent with a multiplicity of gods inhabiting their life, and everything being sacred. When you get these sky gods, when you get these punitive male god figures, things get the sacredness gets taken out of them. So when something is a sacred grove of trees, suddenly becomes timber, right? If you have gods in the streams and what have you, can't dump all this crap in it that these people that inhabit this society can and what have you. So yeah, practice Wicca, and you know, I don't know if I'm going to go out and be a pagan, but hey, what the hell. I'd give it a whirl. WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hello. How are you, Peter?
Doing good.
It's me, R.B. Ham. Long time no hear.
Oh, yeah. Hi.
Hi. I used to, when you were on IE America, I used to send you stuff through the email, but I could never get through on the phone because the phone calls from Canada were blocked.
Oh, where are you calling from?
Right now, Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, Canada.
Cisco. We got four below here in the Detroit area. What's it like by you?
We got a Chinook came in blowing in from Alberta. We're at plus 2 degrees right now. Everything's melting.
Damn, I wish I mean, that's plus two centigrade.
Yeah.
So that's like 34 or something.
38. Yeah. Well, we were minus 20 degrees Celsius 2 days ago. We're at plus two now. You tell me that weather changes aren't happening.
That's right.
Yeah, there's some wacky crap going on. Anyway, I wanted to phone in. I've been talking to Mike Malloy lately and stuff, and I heard that he has decided that he's laid down the law. He says if the Democrats fold and allow Alberto Torquemada Gonzalez to be sworn in as the new Justice Minister, that's it. He's had it with the Democratic Party.
Well, I have never had much good to say about the Democrats. And actually, voting for John Kerry is the first time in my entire life I ever voted for a Democratic candidate for president.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. And
even he was like such a watered-down version of...
Well, that's why he lost. Nobody voted. I mean, few, but the vast majority of people voted against Bush. It was it almost worked. I mean, the percentage difference between the anti-Bush forces and the pro-Bush forces were so close that it is a statistical dead heat. And many people, of course, claim and I support this view that probably a good cool couple million people were turned away. Way by Republican hooks and crooks to make sure that votes weren't counted and that people didn't have access to voting machines and what have you.
And then there's also the black box voting little scam that was going on too, the Diebold and all that. But also, the mere fact that when I grew up in high school, when I was a young man up here in Canada and read about, you know, the founding of democracy in America, and I always admired them more than us because we have this archaic parliamentary system, and you guys seem to have gotten it right, eh?
Mm-hmm.
And then the more I learned about it, the more I realized, well, if you only have two parties and they're both working for the same people, is that really a democracy?
Well, there you go. For one thing, if we would have had a parliamentary system, and it would have come out that the president of the United States had, let's give him the benefit of the doubt, had been so thoroughly mistaken about weapons of mass destruction that there turned out not to be not as many, but zero, absolute zero, that the government would fall because of such thorough, at best, incompetence. I mean, I say it was purposeful lies, but, extreme old me. But, that he would have been out of there. But I think I actually can't remember too much the thinking of the founding fathers, but they wanted more stability. I mean, people always say, you have a parliamentary system, and you wind up like things are in Italy or were. They've had a pretty stable government for a while. I should move on, so thank you so much.
Okay, you bet.
Hey, thanks for making our show international.
No problem.
All right, Saskatchewan. Wow. Here's what Tracy writes in to calltalkyes@yahoo.com from Livonia, Michigan. I just want you to know that tonight I was driving home and flipping through the channels and happened upon your show. What caught my attention was a list of things to be done before Bush's inauguration. I listened for a minute longer, and then you moved on to an email by Steve who was upset about all the, quote, gay crap that you discuss on radio. I just want you to know that I was thoroughly impressed with your response. I appreciate your comments and how clearly you express your position. I would love to have more people in my community like yourself. It was refreshing to hear that someone outside the gay community thinks that gays and lesbians deserve respect. Isn't that a shame? Isn't that a shame that that actually is a compliment to me, that I think other people are deserving of respect and that they deserve the same rights as everybody else, that I get actually applauded for that, that there's still a percentage of our community that harbor such intolerant and stupid views? I'm very glad that I come across your station tonight. Keep up the good work, and thanks, Tracy. Well, thank you, Tracy, but again, it's a shame that I should even get a compliment like that. And also, you know, I mean, it's the anti-gay forces, the intolerant bigots are always the loudest mouths, always. So don't assume that everyone around you is... you know, intolerant. Did I? I don't. Well, I can tell this story real quickly. There was this couple of guys, a gay couple, moved into on our block about halfway down, and they in this beautiful house. Actually, the house was built by disciples of Frank Lloyd Wright, the architect. Not a real big house or anything like that. And then they just did it over more, and they said they wanted to invite all the neighbors. And you know. I don't know. I mean, I know my neighbors. I don't know them real well. But I thought, how's this all going to come down? And would these, like, straight couples and would these elderly couples and all that show up? And I went over to their house, and damn, was it nice. The whole neighborhood was there. There were a lot of their gay friends, so there was, gay men. And then there was just all these ordinary couple, you know, men and couples in their 70s and young couples in their 30s with kids and all that, and and there were people even of different color too. I don't want to say that too loud, but just imagine that, this panorama of who we are, the rainbow. That's why that symbol is so important. And the people that are listening, there's people listening right now that are just grinding their teeth and thinking and filled with hatred and they're people that we should extend, once we don't allow them to affect us legally or socially, we should have compassion for them, because people that are filled with hate and resentment and anger and all that, that's really sad. Because ultimately, all those things that you think about, color and religion and race, or I guess it's color and sexual orientation and all that, doesn't really matter. Doesn't really matter. I mean, it really doesn't. That's, you know, the liberal thing, you know, that things like that doesn't matter. And it's true. It's just that these right-wingers won't give it up. They're always causing problems in our society. They're always causing problems, even when there's not a problem. Like with this Christmas stuff about how, you know, Christmas is under attack. Thank you, Ralph. 313-298-WRIF. Hi, it's Night Call. You're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, Pete.
Hi.
Bah humbush.
Bah humbush.
Hey, I got a little local story on a little town paper I want to read to you real quick.
Woo.
Okay, teenager pleads no contest to lesser charge in sex case. Criminal sexual conduct charges have been dropped against the teenage son of local legislator in exchange for lesser counts connected with alleged sexual relationships with an underage girl. Leland S. Bisbee, 17, son of State Representative Clark Bisbee, Republican. Jackson pleads no contest to recently to indecent exposure and contributing to the delinquency of a minor.
Mm-hmm.
He will not have to do any DNA testing or enter the state sex offenders list.
Well, that's nice. What do they say? With rank comes privilege, right?
Right. But what he gets is eight months probation.
Wow.
But when I'm looking at sentencing here, and here this poor sap here, Gwen Damien, 23, who lives in the ghetto, gets 95 to 180 days months in jail and credit for 168 days.
I mean, it goes on. The story goes a little longer, Pete.
Well,
you
needn't. But if you started assembling, and I keep telling myself, I'm actually not very orderly, because a lot of my friends that are journalists and what have you, they have like copious files of stuff. And I thought one time that I ought to keep a file on all the Republican hypocrites that are like 10 to 1 or 20 to 1 over Democrats get caught in sex scandals and corruption scandals. And like I was just saying to the other guy, I'm not even trying to make any brief for the Democratic Party. But in terms of corruption and hypocrisy, the Republicans outdo the Democrats probably 20 to 1.
Oh, I tell you, Pete, you're going to dig this one. A local Santa Claus got busted with a bag of weed in his pocket.
Well, that's okay.
He left his coat somewhere, and the cops found, or a security guard found a little bag in it, so they put Santa in jail for 90 days. But that's going to save me some money, because I told my kids Santa's going to jail. He won't be out sending presents for my the kids. So.
You ever hear that Bob Seger song, Santa has got a brand new bag?
Yeah, I guess so.
I guess so. All right. Thank you, my friend. I appreciate it. All right. But let me thank you, Ralph Dizzy. Let me just read this. Kim writes in, been listening since 1983. Three? Is that what it says? Yeah, wow, that's a long time. Have we been doing it that long? I guess so. Seems like there is an abundant amount of spoon-fed repubbies as time goes on. Have you noticed that, or is it just me? And I wonder, the latter-day righties were at least somewhat intelligent, before. I wonder if there is a lull on the Fox channel at this time. Also, I love reading the Bible for its great stories. By the way, Adam and Eve were never married. All right, Kim. Thank you very much. But they committed the ultimate sin. See, that's one of the reasons I don't like the story, that we're inherently sinful. I don't buy that. I think we're inherently good. We're born good. There's a sociobiology, inherent goodness of human beings. Boy, that's a philosophical question, too. We won't get into that. 313-298-WRIF. Hi, it's Night Call. You're on the air.
Hi, Pete.
Hi.
Good show tonight.
Thank you.
I guess I just wanted to make a couple points since topics have been bouncing around tonight, kind of about religion and how it relates to economics, believe it or not.
Wait, my hearing must be going. What was this topic, did you say?
How religion.
Oh, religion. Okay, yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, relates to kind of the economic condition of our society. And I think what you're seeing is kind of analogous to what happened to the Roman Empire, and there's a lot of parallels. Because Rome was a republic, and it became an empire kind of as the Roman economy began to mature and kind of decay, and because it needed to expand more and militarize to appropriate more and more resources.
But also because of its overextension of its military.
Right. Yeah. It was kind of a vicious circle. And it exhausted its resources to keep expanding. And then, after the empire played itself out, the political culture collapsed and the church took over.
Mm-hmm.
It was the only structure that was left. And it ruled Europe for 1,000 years, and they called the Dark Ages, where there was no real learning that took place, and people pretty much stayed in their place and, lived on the land and didn't try and change, buck City Hall. They just... But it's hard to do when,
Well, yeah, and that's when Christianity transformed itself from a... I'm forgetting. What's the word? I mean, in other words, they expected the immediate return of Christ and the final days were upon them. But then... who was it? Augustine cut a deal with the Emperor Constantine to make the Christian religion the official religion of the empire. And, it was then, in a sense, racketized.
That's exactly what I wanted to say, was that Constantine, there's a really interesting book that just came out about how Constantine made Christianity the religion of the empire. It's called The Closing of the Western Mind.
Oh, yeah.
And really, Constantine, in a lot of ways, sounds to me like George Bush, really the Republican movement. He's just the latest figurehead. But that's their game, is to plug in to the cultural activism of religion, because it doesn't make any demands politically or financially. So the rulers get to do what they want, and they get a base that's detached from any expectations other than mere cultural kind of symbolism.
And they get these chumps to go along with the program that benefits the elite. All the while, they think that they are identifying with power.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, a racket. All right, thank you very much. I got to take a break.
Very smart and very sweet.
She was somewhat...
It's just a color thing with me.
Very black, huh?
Yeah. Oh, that's not right.
Do you consider yourself a racist, or...
I guess I am, but, you know, I don't like intermarriage. Wow.
And is Hallmark aware of that?
Oh, yeah, I told him.
No kidding. And what did he say?
That I'll have to get over it.
Well, you're very forthcoming, I will say.
Yeah.
You're very honest about your feelings for whatever that's worth.
You better be careful with that.
Yeah, heads up.
You guys have fun.
Okay, right. Thanks
later,
so much.
Sir.
Nice talking to you.
Nice talking to you, Charles.
Bye-bye.
My daughter married a black boy.
I can't believe he said that.
Drew and Mike in the Morning. Broadcast program. On the Riff.
WRIF.com. Detroit's rock station, 101 WRIF, and the best radio website in the world. WRIF.com brings the hottest deals in the Motor City. Make your night in the town even better without hitting your wallet. With the Riffs, dine online. You are only one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price. Dine online and eat for less with WRIF.com. The Riff presents your opportunity to save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants, like Bellacino's Pizza and Grinders with 17 locations. Go to www.bellacinos.com to find a Bellacino's near you. Log on to www.wrim.com. You can purchase full-price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price. Quantities are limited, so you'd better act fast. It's all from the station that delivers you more. 101, The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com. Check out special offers and savings for Motor City businesses. Like Buddy's Pizza, Detroit's number one holiday tradition, invites you to give the gift of square taste with Buddy's gift certificates, available at any of their 9 metro area locations. Ask about how you can get a free gift certificate. Buddy's, Detroit's number one square pizza since 1946. Log on today and save with Detroit's Rock Station at WRIF.com.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the Morning.
We talk with Carson from Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. That's the blonde one. About his new book on fashion for men.
You talk about blue jeans and how important blue jeans are.
They should get you laid, and also they should be like the UPS man. They should give you a nice package.
So you want us to be wearing tight jeans, in other words?
Just well-fitting.
It seems like there's so many different companies that make them, and they all fit slightly different. It's hard to find, like, the one that really makes your ass look good.
That's why you have to take a gay guy like me with you to say, oh, girl, your butt looks cute in those. You guys got it. You guys are such metrosexuals. I love it.
Really?
Hey, I have a joke.
Okay.
What's the worst thing about rollerblading?
I give up.
Telling your dad you're gay.
I love that. Okay, Carson, thanks
all right,
for the time.
Very good. Great to talk
thanks,
to you.
Thanks, guys. Love you more than my luggage.
Hey, dude.
Drew and Mike in the Morning. Broadcast program. On the Riff.
Riff.
Issue, but I have the greatest respect for people that are doing moral and ethical work in the world on the basis of their religion. And just coincidentally, the two interviews I'm going to be airing at 1 a.m. both, in a sense, have a religious foundation. The first one, boy, I can't tell which is which now, looking at it, but I'll figure it out. They're already in the CD players. One is with Rudy Simons, who just came back from a fact-finding tour of Haiti with the auxiliary bishop of Detroit, Thomas Gumbleton. And the other is with Gloria Albrecht, who's a professor of religion at the University of Detroit Mercy, who's talking about family values, another bit of hypocrisy and phony crap on the part of Republicans. All right, I did say I was going to talk about unions, so I will do that very quickly and then get back to the calls. Apparently, hey, can these huge institutions ever get off their butt and do anything, protect the wage standards of the average worker? Anyways, maybe the AFL-CIO and more than half a dozen unions are planning an unusual and unusually expensive campaign to pressure Walmart, the world's largest retailer, to improve its wages and benefits. Not even trying to organize. I mean, that's what's so pathetic. You know, that Walmart, the only place it's organized north of Mexico is in, boy, it's in Quebec, and it's Jonquière. Pardon my French. I just can't do it. But they're not even trying to organize these workers. That Walmart, which is the world's largest employer, is so viciously anti-union. So they can pay people low wages. Now, someone can go check this, but I believe the heirs of Sam Walton, Sam's Club and Walmart, the kids who didn't earn anything, they just got their money by inheritance, are like the 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th wealthiest people in the United States. And I believe their total income or their total wealth outstrips even Gates. Maybe not. But they're the richest, some of the richest people in America. And they fight like such incredible tenacity. And they've been all these scandals about not paying people what they're supposed to and, you know, just tons of stuff. And so they're the 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th wealthiest people in America. If they doubled everybody's wages that work for Walmart, if they gave everybody the best health plans, 401ks, and retirement plans in the nation, if they paid for dental and visual insurance, if they did everything imaginable, if they paid for daycare, you know what would happen to the wealth status of the Walton kids? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. They'd be the 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th wealthiest people in the country. It is almost pathology. It's pathological, their desire to rule and keep people in a peasant status, $8, $9 an hour. They could be paying people $20 an hour and full, wonderful benefits. Instead, they work assiduously to keep people at these bum wages. Now, here's what Christy Gallagher, a Walmart spokeswoman, said, warning that higher wages could lead to higher prices. Well, damn. Let's make sure those Walmart people don't get any higher wages, because we might have to pay higher prices. And anyways, as soon as you get higher wages, then all the price of everything goes up anyways, right? So what's ever the sense of getting wage increases at all? Well, I'll talk about that in a minute. Here's what Christy Gallagher says. It appears that you get this language. It appears that unions want to take millions of dollars in dues from their members and use them to rob average Americans of their right to pay less for the basics in life. You need to ask one question. Is it fair to ask American consumers to pay higher prices to subsidize a relatively small pocket of individuals just because they're making the most noise? Well, I could talk about that till 1 a.m. I mean, this is so filled with just such incredible stuff. Well, first off, if you started paying your workers, your associates, they didn't want to call them workers, your associates, a decent wage, you don't have to raise prices. You do not have to raise your prices. This is blackmail. We're paying you peasant wages because if you get organized, what'll happen? We'll have raised the prices. We'll make sure you don't do any better than you were. We have complete control over your life. This is real democratic, right? This is, you know, it's like a democratic political process and Nazi work process. We control you 100%. Is it fair to ask American consumers to pay higher prices to subsidize a relatively small pocket of individuals? That's their workers. That's their workers. So these people who contribute generously, by the way, to Republicans, want to make sure that people keep getting bum wages and then try to turn consumers on them, fearing because other people get bum wages that they'll have to pay higher prices if workers at Walmart get a decent wage. They are so evil. They are just so evil. Where are we going? Ralph Dizzy. All right. Line two. 313-298-WRIF. I'm Peter Werby. Hi, you're on the air. Good evening.
How you doing, Peter?
Doing great.
I called after listening to you talk about, you know, the unions and making, you know, quite a bit of money and good money in the UAW. As a UAW member, I make a damn good salary.
You should.
But it's only tempered by the fact that I worked approximately 1,600 overtime hours this year.
Man.
And you figure an average 40-hour week, you know, times 52 weeks, maybe 50 weeks, you're looking at 2,000 hours.
Right.
So far this year, I've worked almost 3,600.
Oh, man.
That's three-quarters of a regular 40-hour week just to make $100,000.
That's amazing. And plus, then you wound up with what, after taxes, about 75?
Yeah, roughly.
Yeah. And what did and where did that 25 grand go? Not to help you very much in your community, I'm sure.
No, because I think I got the 600 from the tax cut, so it really didn't help me out any.
No.
Nothing of any major. But on another note, the local I deal with, I'm on the CAP, the Community Action Program there.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing a postcard for the minimum wage bills, the George Miller and Edward Kennedy bills that are currently before the House and Senate. Going to do a postcard to the various reps throughout the state. You know, union members, family members sign the postcard, and the union will send it in to them supporting these bills that have basically been tabled by the Republican-controlled Congress.
And the raise they're talking about is, I hate to say it, is fairly pathetic. I mean, if we're the wealthiest country in the world, why don't we have the highest minimum wage in the world?
Well, it is pretty poor. I'm not sure if you're aware of Representative Chris Bell out of Texas, I believe.
Mm-hmm, no.
He has another bill before the House concerning minimum wage, including a inflationary yearly add-on. It goes up to $7 in the two-year, three-tier program, and then it also has a inflationary yearly add-on every year after that.
Mm-hmm.
But that one's been sent to Subcommittee on Worker Protection. And I don't think that one will ever get out of subcommittee.
That's amazing. I mean, when you look at what the unions in Europe have won, like a month legal vacation with full pay and maternity and paternity leaves, minimum wages up around $12 an hour. And here we are, as I said, the wealthiest country in the world, with what's the minimum wage? $5.15 an hour.
Yeah, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah. Did I ever meet you at any of the CAP conferences in Washington?
Unfortunately, no. I am relatively young and just started into CAP at the local 2280,
mm-hmm.
the Ford's Van Dyke plant.
Yeah.
But I will be attending this year's.
Well, unfortunately, I won't. The reason that I was is, I don't know if you heard earlier, I was talking about that I worked for a network called the IE America Radio Network from 2000 through the middle of 2003, and the network was owned by the United Auto Workers. So during that period, every February, we would go off to Washington and broadcast directly from the CAP conferences.
Okay, unfortunately, I missed that. I just got out of work a little while back.
Well, that's okay. I was just wondering, because I met a lot of incredible people at those. Have you ever been to one before?
I have not been to any of the national conferences.
Well, I shouldn't. I'll tell you a secret. We were a number of nights, like people do, we were up partying pretty late. And so I slept in, because, you know, I didn't have to. I wasn't, you know, I mean, I'm not in the CAP group, but I'll tell you, every single delegate was there at 9 in the morning, because they took roll, and this was not just party time, although at night it was. All right, well, congratulations. That's the kind of work we need in our groups and in our community, so I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
You have a good one now. I'm sorry, line 3, thank you. Hi, WRIF, you're on the air. Good evening.
Okay. Peter, this is Marion from Ann Arbor.
Yeah, Marion?
Yes, I just wanted to let you know that where people are getting their rationale for anti-gay sentiment is from the book of Leviticus, and they also say, thou shalt not suffer which to live, and that you are not to have relations with a menstruating female and several other, prohibitions against menstruating women.
There's lots of weird stuff in the Bible.
Huh?
Yeah, there's a lot of weird stuff in the Bible.
A lot of weird stuff. And, and the Council of Nicaea, about 400 A.D., Christians believed in reincarnation up until then, or at least it wasn't prohibited. And then they all got together and said, well, you know, we think we can control people better with hellfire and damnation. You know, if people believe they can come back and, you know, and learn from their mistakes, then it's harder for the church to have control over them.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things with the Bible, you could always read almost anything into it. The slave owners justified slavery by parts in the Bible that okayed it, and the abolitionists, many of them who were motivated by religious zeal that wanted to end the slavery, found parts in the Bible against it. I mean, in my neighborhood, there's two gay Christian churches. So,
well, I'm a Christian, and I believe in reincarnation. And I also believe that we're supposed to use our heads when we're reading the Bible, that it is inspired, but it's not the literal word of God. It is inspired by God.
There you go. All right, Mary, you kind of, the cell phone isn't doing so good, but I think I got all your opinions. I appreciate it. Thank you for calling 313-298-WRIF. Ron, listening in Fort Wayne, Indiana, writes, to calltalkyes@yahoo.com, you should be commended for putting up with the brain-dead, goose-stepping fascistos who call your show. Ever notice the I, me, my mentality they exhibit? There's a whole lot of them in out here in Indiana, and I let ones know that if I walked by them and they were on fire, that I wouldn't even piss on them. That's actually a Chumbawamba song. You know Chumbawamba? I get knocked down, but I get up again. They got a song that they use that line. You and Mike Malloy, who was my cohort, unindicted co-conspirator on the IE America Network, he says, are the greatest. Well, thank you. Keep up the good work. I'll try my best. It's WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Yeah, how you doing?
Good.
I got a comment about, you're talking about Walmart and unions. I don't know if you're familiar with Charade Knife Company.
No.
They were around for over 100 years. Walmart decided to place a rather large order. When it came time to pay and pick up their order, they argued the price so bad that they got so low that when they canceled their order, the company went out of business. A knife company that's been around making quality products for well over 100 years.
Wow.
That's how corrupt them people are.
Well, it's even worse than that, is that for the first time in history, a buyer dictates price to the seller. So they sit down with particularly Chinese companies, and they tell the supplier, the manufacturer, how much they're going to pay. So if they're going to, just to say, they're going to pay a dollar, well, then the employer has to say, well, if I only get a dollar for this, I'm going to have to pay my worker 15 cents an hour, right?
That's exactly my point with the Charade Knife Company, is that Charade was an American-made knife company, very old. They had a great warranty, like Buck and Gerber and all them guys. I mean, just an all-around great company, great product, and Walmart just hung them out to dry with an order. I mean, that's horrible. I mean, that just shows how corrupt they are. Bringing in non-union migrant workers, paying them dirt wages, and then getting caught and just saying, well, we didn't know. I mean, that's just stupid. I work for a company, $100 million a year corporation. I make $11.25 an hour. I have to work 80 hours a week just to survive.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And I work about 80 hours a week, and I think I've maybe made just under 40 this year.
Damn.
At over 80 hours a week. Our company's average is 88 hours a week.
Oh, my God.
That's how bad this is.
Is it union?
Yeah, Teamsters. But even then, the problem is that our union hall, the president of it, is the owner's nephew.
Well, I mean, that's the Teamsters. I thought they'd gotten away from that kind of stuff. But still, $11.50 an hour, I mean, sometimes people say, wow, that's almost double, that's over double the minimum wage. That's not, nobody should have to work that. In fact, in France, they legally reduced the work week to 35 hours a week. So there was this dream. I think I mentioned this. I always wind up mentioning this about this time in the show. There was this dream in the 50s that that they would have a 30-hour week for 40 hours pay, that productivity was such from American workers and provided a level of profitability for the owners that you could begin to reduce the work week. But instead, what happened, they've actually expanded the work week, withdrawn benefits, and increased dramatically the wealth of the owners to the point where now you have people that are worth billions. I mean, you can't even spend that. I mean, you want to say, I want to get rich so I can live like a rich person. But they don't even spend their money. It's like what we're talking about, the Waltons that own Walmart. They just want to get wealthy, and they want to stop workers from getting decent wages. For what? I don't know. I guess it's just pathology.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just the way of life, I guess. You got, like I said, I work for a $100 million a year corporation, and I got to fight to make $40,000 a year?
No, that doesn't make a lot of sense. Well, they can pull off. I mean, unfortunately, you're going to be facing this for the next few weeks, but they can't pull this off endlessly. This has turned out to be the biggest scam and racket since the Roman Empire, and unless we change things dramatically in this country, things are going to go absolutely the same way. We're going to go down the drain. All right. Thank you, my friend. I appreciate it. And have happy holidays. Working as hard as you do, you certainly deserve it. Bye-bye now. Let me see who sent this. Is there a name here? Numbers. Anyways, you have received a picture from, and it's numbers, and it's a dog, like, snarling, and it says, "Bite me, Walmart. The Waltons are the richest in the world. Please call Bush." Oh, I can't say that on the air. I probably could. It's a clinical term, but still. Ralph Dizzy, another call. All right, just a couple more. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, Peter. How you doing?
Doing good. Thank you.
I just want to thank Rip for night call, and just wanted to see how you weigh in on what happened to Rumsfeld this last week.
Well, which of his many, many mistakes are you referring to?
Well, It seems like in the past week, this last that press conference that he had with the National Guard and the Reservists definitely came to a boil, and actually a bunch of Republican senators came out, and it's hilarious. Like, none of them call for his resignation. Well,
now some of them have.
I think a couple did, but like you got, you know, Susan Collins of Maine, Trent Lott of Mississippi, Norm Coleman of Minnesota, John McCain of Arizona, Chuck Hagel of Nebraska, Evan Bayh, Democrat, voted for the war, William Kristol, neocon with Rumsfeld, writer for the Weekly Standard, Project for a New American Century. They're all coming out against him, or at least have a lot of crap.
But what'll happen is that Bush will just stonewall them, because as I said earlier, that they don't care the catastrophic mistakes that Rumsfeld has made right from the beginning, assuring the American public that we'd get rose petals strewn in front of our troops as they liberated Baghdad instead of bombs. Just hold on, just stonewall, keep talking about terror. How does he say it? Terror. Not terror, but terror. And everything will be okay, because like any mafia don, what he values most is loyalty.
It's a war on a feeling. And you know, all the troops are behind it. Isn't it funny that we haven't heard any of the numbers about how the troops voted?
Yeah.
You know, despite all the other irregularities and, you know...
Well, there's been 5,500 desertions, and there's a number of famous cases that are making the news about troops refusing. One Navy guy refused to even crew on a ship that was taking American soldiers there. He said, "I'm going to take 3,200 guys, and 100 of them aren't going to come back." He said, "I'm not doing that." All right, I got to end the show, at least this part of it. So thank you, my friend, for being the last caller. But don't go away. We're going to do a couple of interesting interviews. But remember one of the things, and you still get this, that we're fighting terror in Iraq. But here's what the European Union counterterrorism coordinator says. Radical youths from Europe and the Arab world are being trained in Iraq, according to Europe's anti-terror chief, warning that such clandestine camps could multiply in unstable or failed states like Iraq. So what he's saying is that we're not being made safer. We're being more at risk. Saddam Hussein sends a message to Iraqis from prison, tells Iraqis to unite against the occupation. Got to end this, folks, before more damage is done. All right, stay tuned. Got a lot of, I think very interesting interviews, and we'll talk next week. Happy holidays to you.
This is the Riff's award-winning Night Call with Peter Werby. Peter will return with more Night Call in just a moment.
Hi, it's Judy with David Hall from Rock Financial. Now, David, it seems like Rock Financial has been growing all year long. You're hiring headed into the holidays, I hear.
You are, and you put it perfectly. We are growing our company. We're looking for the best of the best. We were voted the number 13 best place to work in America and the number one best place to work in Metro Detroit. We're pretty proud of it.
Wow, that's a title and a half.
Well, it's something we're proud of, and at Rock Financial, our mortgage experts work hard. Benefits are outstanding. Sky's the limit as far as upward growth in our company. And our team members are our best resource. We're continuing to grow and add great new folks every day.
So you have to train them, of course, to be mortgage experts.
Extensive paid training to all new mortgage experts. We want to make sure that our experts are educated. They go through 5 weeks up front, then weekly training every week as a mortgage expert.
Wow, only the USMC is a more grueling program, huh?
We're looking for energetic, enthusiastic, committed, and most of all, passionate people, because we're very passionate about our business.
So if you got somebody who's happy in their current career, would you think maybe they might call and find out about your?
That's what we're looking for. Make a strong upward move by coming to Rock Financial.
More information at
rockfinancialcareers.com. That's rockfinancialcareers.com.
Or 866-JOBS-200. Thanks, David.
Thank you, TD.
You've heard about plastic surgery, but you're afraid it might leave you looking, well, plastic. I'm Dr. Jeffrey Cole. Done properly, cosmetic surgery won't necessarily give you an unnatural look. Breast implants come in all shapes and sizes. Maybe you just want a little something extra to make you look better in your clothes. Or you want your proportion to be just a little more proportional. Call my office now to schedule a free consultation. I'll take the time to explain cosmetic surgery and show you the procedures that are right for your shape and size. You won't look fake. You'll look better and feel better about yourself. Find the difference the right cosmetic surgeon and surgery can make.
Call 1-800-523-3149 to schedule your free cosmetic surgery consultation with Dr. Cole. Dr. Cole is one of the area's most trusted cosmetic surgeons. If there's something about your body that you want to change, Dr. Cole will recommend the right cosmetic surgery for you. So call 1-800-523-3149. As always, Dr. Cole has many low-interest financing options available. Call 1-800-523-3149. That's 1-800-523-3149. 149.
Hook it. So yesterday I'm at the mall sitting on the lap of that big guy in the red suit telling him what I want for Christmas. Two kids on my new Harley Davidson motorcycle and some chrome pipes and a Willie G leather jacket and chaps and the Harley calendar hot motorcycle chicks and Harley coffee mugs and a cool Motown Harley sweatshirt and maybe a new Harley. Yeah, a new Softail Deluxe.
Buddy, I'm not Santa. That's him over there.
Oh, sorry.
Santa! Santa! I have my list!
Well, you're a spirited fella there knocking down all those little children to get up here on my lap.
I'm so excited to see you, Santa. I brought my Motown Harley list.
Oh, I see that. My goodness, it's long. You must have been very good this year.
No, not really.
Oh, I'm sure you've been more naughty than nice. Let me check my list. Oh, there you are. Very naughty.
Uh-huh.
I'll give you a choice. Coal or this little import motorcycle?
Whether you've been naughty or nice, Motown Harley-Davidson has a lot of opportunities to save on all of your Harley-Davidson gift ideas. For sales, specials, events, or just look at cool pictures, log on to MotownHarley.com. Motown Harley-Davidson in Taylor on Telegraph, just north of Eureka.
Remember, guys, chicks dig a guy on a real motorcycle.
Buy, sell, or rent a bike at Motown!
Okay.
You have the plan. Now find a room full of new and exciting ideas for your home. If you're thinking of building a home, remodeling a kitchen, or any room, using Heard Windows with Quality Lumber is the answer. Quality Lumber brings quality products to you at wholesale prices every time. You have a beautiful view. Why not enjoy it? Heard Windows are the answer. You can create a look pleasing to the eye without jeopardizing energy efficiency. Heard allows you to choose from 5 types of glazing, 7 standard clad colors, and multiple hardware options. Quality Lumber's brand new idea center style showroom is the ticket for you. Come visit rooms full of ideas for your bath, kitchen, and much more. Quality Lumber's computerized design it program will help you visualize your dream before it becomes reality. You will get unsurpassed quality products at wholesale prices with service and customer satisfaction. Quality Lumber, 586-727-7001. 586-727-7001. Quality Lumber, just 8 miles west of I-94 at 8706 Gratiot in Richmond. Visit their showroom for the most beautiful ideas for your home. Quality Lumber.
Oh boy, a present for me?
Now I know it's just a putter, but it could be a whole set of golf clubs.
Huh?
Wouldn't it be nice to give a holiday gift that could turn into something even nicer?
What could this be?
Now I know it's just a set of floor mats, but it could be a brand new convertible.
Okay.
That's why holiday instant tickets from the Michigan Lottery are the perfect gift. Holiday instants are not only fun to give to family, friends, co-workers, they're also fun to get. And with instant cash prizes, including the new game Millions and Millions that's loaded with $1,000 prizes and a top prize of $2 million, one fun little ticket is a chance at one big present.
What's in this little envelope? Hey, a holiday instant ticket!
Now I know it's just
a chance at $500,000. I love it!
So look for Jingle Bills, Holiday Surprise, Tis the Season, Happy Holidays, and the newest $20 game, Millions and Millions, only from the Michigan Lottery. A gift this fun could get even funner. Holiday instant tickets. It's how fun.
Love it!
Is done.
Hey, Detroit, are you worried about health insurance? Are you tired of high health insurance premiums? Are you uninsured, recently received a rate increase, or stuck with high COBRA payments? Well, help is just a phone call away. Call Health Insurance Giant at 1-800-548-8331. That's Health Insurance Giant at 1-800-548-8331. When you call, you'll talk to Mike Kay. Mike Kay will meet you anytime, anywhere, to hook you up with quality health insurance you can afford. Health Insurance Giant is dedicated to providing quality coverage at affordable prices. If you're single, have a family, or small business, and want to save on health insurance, you need to call them. Health Insurance Giant at 1-800-548-8331. That's 1-800-548-8331. You can save up to 37% with Health Insurance Giant. Your Health Insurance Giant coverage includes doctor visits, preventive care, a prescription card, vision, dental, plus up to $5 million in hospitalization coverage. Health Insurance Giant lets you pick your own physician from their PPOM network program. For giant savings, call Health Insurance Giant at 1-800-548-8331. Health Insurance Giant has helped thousands to obtain quality medical insurance for the lowest health insurance rates guaranteed. Call Health Insurance Giant or log on to healthinsurancegiant.com.
This is NICO. Now, here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Happy holidays to everyone. Peter Werby here with you. And I bring up a subject that, and to some extent, is somewhat gone into ill repute, something I think shouldn't have, but it shows you the power of the conservative and somewhat, to some extent, the corporate media, and that's feminism. Here's a book. It's entitled Hitting Home, Feminist Ethics, Women's Work, and the Betrayal of Family Values. Now, we hear a lot about family values, but let's go into what they really work out to be in terms of government policy, particularly under the current government. My guest in the studio is author Gloria H. Albrecht. She is professor of religious studies and women's studies at the University of Detroit Mercy. She's the author of Character of Our Communities, Towards an Ethic of Liberation for the Church. And Gloria Albrecht, thanks for joining me on the Peter Werby Show.
It's my pleasure, Peter.
As a professor of religious studies and women's studies at the same time, any conflict there? People often think, at least sort of the dominant right-wing Christian view, is those are probably so far apart as to almost to be unimaginable.
Well, if you consider the fact that at least half of all religious traditions are women, and lots more than half on any given sacred day of worship, women's issues are real important in religions. I just got done teaching a course called Women and Religion, and we look at the work of religious feminists in Islam, Judaism, and Christianity. It's more than I could even begin to tell you.
The biggest, probably, at least the most prominent author that comes to my mind is Mary Daly, who is also similarly, I believe, a professor of religion, isn't she?
I'm not sure whether she was a professor of religion or philosophy. She's now retired, of course, and she began a lot of this with her famous phrase, "If God is male, then the male is God." Believe me, religious feminism has gone way past that, and itself is a very diverse group of thinkers.
Well, let's look at this a little, because we're really not going to talk about religion, although that may enter into it, but rather, what has happened to the family? Most of us are in families to one degree or another, different definitions of the family, but there's this sort of model family of mother and father, male and female, two kids. That's Gloria Allbrecht. That's not really with us very much anymore, is it?
No, in fact, that's now a minority form of family. It certainly is an important form of family. It's the one, though, that seems to be in our consciousness when we use the word family, and we think about those good old days in the 1950s, where for the first time in American history, a single wage earner, typically the father in the 1950s, could actually bring home a living wage that supported a family and permitted women as wives and mothers to stay at home. I say for the first time in American history was the 1950s, where most families, over 50% of families.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to go on to say that what I want to talk about in this book is that the 1950s was a special decade. It was a decade of the GI Bill. It was the decade when government was providing a lot of support for typically men to go to college and also to buy that first starter home in Levitt towns around the nation. What my book wants to talk about is how not just the government, but our economy has abandoned support of families. And that's the kind of family values I want to talk about.
I think that's important. Let's just sort of get at some of the phrases, though, in the subtitle of your book, Hitting Home. Feminist ethics. The conservative critique would be it's exactly feminist ethics that are part of what has eroded the traditional family.
Well, but what I mean by feminist ethics is merely, if we could say merely about this, that women are equal in humanity, equal in intelligence and capabilities with men. And while there are certain obvious differences, they should not make women or cause women to be either politically or economically more vulnerable in a society than men. So I'm talking about the social, political, economic equality of women when I use the term feminist ethics, recognizing that women come in a variety of races, ages, ethnicities, and that I want to include all of those women. Not just a dominant group of so-called white women.
Mm-hmm. Now, why? I said in the introduction to this that feminism has of late gotten kind of a, quote, bad name, that without there even really being much behind it, it's just sort of thought of, it's sort of collapsed parallel with the designation of liberalism. I suppose that's enough of a question.
Well, when I ask my students what they think feminism means and then ask them where did they get the ideas that they have, it's quite interesting. They often think that feminism means hatred of men or being anti-male or putting women above men. And, of course, my definition of feminism means none of those things. When I ask them, where did you learn this? Well, it might be in church, or it might be, I hate to say this, Peter, from the media.
No, I'm right there with you.
And so images of bra burning, which in fact didn't happen, but tends to be a major symbol. Women who don't want to be in communion with men.
And isn't that incredible how enduring that image? I thought it did happen once, that it happened at a Miss America pageant.
Well, it's my understanding that, in fact, they were talking about doing this, but when the fire department told them that they would be arrested for starting fires with their bras, they actually didn't carry it through.
Okay.
But nonetheless, that remains this dominant kind of symbol, doesn't it, of what feminism is, which has no reality to what feminism actually is about or what feminism has accomplished. I think the conservative voices are concerned because women in the workforce now they see that as weakening the family. And here's where my own work and conservative work, we could start talking together. Mm-hmm. We don't have the same goals, but we start out with the same concern about families, too, which is a part of that subtitle.
Mm-hmm. You know, you may think it odd that I want to go back to bra burning, but the fact that it is such a powerful image and so enduring, I think, speaks legions. It's remember the phrase, I don't think it's used anymore, probably, you know, from the early part of last century, was loose women, right?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, yeah. So loose women and then women burning their bras, women flaunting sexuality, unconcerned with convention. And every once in a while when I really get mad, I say, next time, I mean, I'm married now to a woman, I say, next time I'm marrying a man, I'm burning my bra, I'm hugging a tree. All of these images that have such an impact that, you know, if you think about it, really don't have much to do with other people. In other words, all that's my business, right? If I want to go out in the woods and hug a tree, burn my bra, which I don't have, or marry a man, which should be my right if I would choose to do it. Yet the impact of that imagery is extraordinarily powerful.
I think, though, I'm a social ethicist, and so I tend to see things in terms of what you might call your personal behavior. I'm going to argue that personal behavior impact society, and that we have to take that into account when we decide the morality of any personal behavior. But I think you're right that feminism got linked with the idea of sexual promiscuity or the loss of traditional sexual values, rightly or wrongly, and kind of carries that label today. Which is funny when you think it also gets linked with being anti-male,
yeah, okay.
Which seems to be kind of a contradiction there.
It does. Gloria H. Albrecht is my guest, and she is author of Hitting Home, Feminist Ethics, Women's Work, and the Betrayal of Family Values. It's published by Continuum, and it originally appeared in hardcover? Is this
yes,
the paper?
Yes, this is the paperback version this fall, which is a lot cheaper than the hardback.
Sure.
So.
Let's talk. I think eventually this gets to be the core of your work, Hitting Home, and that's women's work.
Yes.
And I've kind of taken you all over the place, but you began by saying there was this ideal period in the 1950s of the Ozzie and Harriet view. Dad goes to work, mom stays at home with the family. What happened to end all that?
Well, I'd like to begin by talking about what started all of that, because what I'm trying to say in this book is that what the economy demands of people in terms of producing stuff, it in fact shapes family forms, shapes gender roles, shapes gender identities. If you go back to the beginning of the 1800s, that what we now call the Ozzie and Harriet family began to be created and justified in the turn from an agricultural society to industrial capitalism. At least for middle-income and upper-income white women, dads could go off to work, moms could stay home. But that was a new thing. And in fact, people thought that was a terrible thing for fathers to be away from families like that. So there was a lot of controversy as that began to develop. But keep in mind that that form of family was only possible for certain groups of people. Low-income white women were in the textile mills up in Lowell, Massachusetts. African-American women were in the slave fields. New immigrant women were doing the domestic work that white middle and upper class woman needed to have done around the home. So that model never really fit all women or all families because of economic reasons. 1950s, we have the end of World War II. We have the United States, the only country that has its industrial base intact after World War II. We have a huge market in Europe and Japan wanting our goods. Our industries are exploding. The wages of the average working man are increasing faster than the wages of CEOs in this period of time. Hmm. And so this is a period of expansion. It's a period when government policies were supporting men coming back from war, typically white men, going to college, getting that first starter home, all at the same time. It's also a period where we're beginning to produce lots and lots of consumer goods, and so you have good housekeeping telling women that to be a good woman and a right kind of family, the dad goes off to work, the mom stays home, but she shops. And producing that consumer demand for goods. So we remember this as kind of a golden age. I need to repeat, it wasn't a golden age for lots of African Americans. It's never a golden age for poor people of any race. But we have that image of it as one wage can support a family. What happens after that?
Well, I was going to say, then the dreadful 60s.
The dreadful 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s with a shift towards globalization and a new kind of capitalism. We call it neoliberal capitalism, where the idea is free up businesses and corporations from as much regulation as you possibly can, because the key to all social problems, according to this story, is the free marketplace. Make it as competitive and free as possible. So we talk about free trade now. And you have the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, telling everybody, and including the United States, not that we need their money, it's mostly our money, reduce government services, reduce government spending, reduce government regulations. Let problems be solved by a free and competitive capitalist market system. And my argument in the book is I look very closely at women's work.
Mm-hmm.
I first ask the question, what do we mean by work, and why today does it mean only what you earn money at with all the work going on in homes and families that has to be done if our society is going to be a good society? All right, we ask that question, and I answer it. Then I talk about what are women doing today. Most women are in the workforce. Most mothers are in the workforce. Most mothers with infant children are in the workforce, the formal workforce, earning some kind of salary. What are they doing? Is there equality in the workforce? Is this a step toward equality? My answer is no. They're being drawn into the workforce because in the new neoliberal capitalism, we're losing those manufacturing jobs that used to pay that father's wage, and we're increasing service sector jobs, low wage, low benefits or no benefits, no upward mobility, replace you easily, a dime a dozen worker, and women are being pulled into that kind of work.
Now, this is very complex because, and as it relates to feminism, because 50 years ago, the middle-class white woman as a housemaker was thought of as the little woman and the caregiver and who did all the housework, home work, if you will. And one of the messages of feminism is, and was at the time, was that women are equal, and they can be doctors and fire people and all the rest of it. So in some perverse way, what liberated women, and that was the, in fact, you know, in some ways, that's a, I've always liked that a better phrase, not that it's any of my business, but women's liberation, which sounds a little too militant, I think, for people. As to feminism said, yes, you can be just the same as men, which then means the same level of exploitation, for instance.
Well, and the problem is to be just the same as men also meant going out into a workforce where you are expected to be this competitor who, if it makes more profit for your investors, you're going to downsize or you're going to squeeze on labor costs and so forth. That's not the kind of feminism I want to represent, and partly because, well, you probably remember the feminine mystique and Betty Friedan and her answer to
right.
the white, well, she didn't put it this way. She said the answer to the woman's question is go out and work, just like men do. There's a black historian, Paula Giddings, who said when she heard that, she wondered what planet Friedan had come from, because, of course, women in her tradition, African-American tradition, had been in the workforce for generations and generations and had not found equality by being in the workforce.
What about the rather cynical remark, but it does have some relationship to reality? They said behind every feminist there's a maid. Essentially, what in thought of as this archetypical view of feminists was a white middle-class woman in Manhattan who was freed up from traditional women's work by employing oftentimes a maid who's a woman of color.
I think there's a lot of truth to that, and my book pays a lot of attention to that. It's not a new thing, however. back in the 1800s, that woman, white middle in, or upper income woman staying at home, had a maid cleaning her house. She might have had a cook. She had Polish boys in the coal mines digging out the coal. All of that cheap exploited labor permits her to stay at home and live well off the salary of the husband going to work. So that's not new. It's taken a new flavor, a new way of doing it in the globalization. We now have people from around the world migrating because a new demand has been created by women going to work. When women go to work, whether they're middle or upper income or low income, they then have to save time in some way. And the way they save time is to buy the products or services of even lower paid women. Hmm. So one of the points I make here is that in this neoliberal capitalism, it's not just men and women, the gender issue. It's also the class issue. And women are being turned against women. Women are exploiting women. And we need to pay attention to that, because what's happening to families? What's happening to everybody's families under this kind of stress?
Well, let's talk about that some more. My guest is Gloria Albrecht, and she's professor of religious studies and women's studies at the University of Detroit in Mercy. She's here in the studio with me. You're listening to the Peter Werbe Show. Her book, published by Continuum, is Hitting Home: Feminist Ethics, Women's Work, and the Betrayal of Family Values. Now, you mentioned in this post-World War II era how wages went up incredibly. And what was done, particularly in the big three auto contracts, is I'm sure you know, is that wage increases were tied to productivity increases. So as the mostly male workforce produced more wealth for the owners, they shared little bits of it with people here, particularly around in our area, here in the Detroit area. I just saw, you may have seen this as well, the United Nations had let two reports out. One, that poverty is increasing worldwide. Secondly, hunger is increasing, particularly among children of the world. All the while, wealth is increasing. So there is actually an opposite trend. And if wealth is increasing, it is accruing to a very, very small class of people, mostly men, around the world, whereas the vast majority of families, I mean, if you have going to bed hungry, wherever you are, and there's hunger in the United States, there's hunger right here in the Detroit area, this is kind of back to the 19th century.
Yes, and my book documents that, but particularly with regard to the United States. What I would like people here in the United States to understand is that the wages of 70% of America's workforce, the real wages, taking into account inflation, have actually decreased since the 1970s. People today are making less money in terms of what it will buy than they were in the 1970s. Entry-level jobs are paying less today than they were in the 1970s. And yet it's not that productivity has fallen, because American productivity, the productivity of the American worker, has continued to increase. So the issue is, why is wealth being siphoned to the top, really, 10%, while the vast middle hangs on by its fingernails and the bottom 20% is losing ground? The middle hangs on because it's added that second adult worker to the workforce.
Yeah, like in my family. Yes, so that's why. And by the way, when I hope you realize, listeners, that when Gloria Albrecht talks about wages being less or than they were in the 1970s, this is for adjusted dollars, of course.
Yes, yeah, so we call real wages, real, which means adjusted for inflation. And the issue then is, what does it buy?
Well, given that we have an administration in office now that is, says it's committed to the free market, I don't know what in it is free. I think, as you said, free from regulation. What does this portend for the family? There, the right and the conservatives and this administration are always talking about family values and how much they mean to them, with the implication that people in the center and on the left, those aren't our big concerns. We're, I don't know what we're after, pleasure. Like, that's something awful. But in other words, they're the people, the right are the people that are the repository of family values, and we know that because they're talking about them all the time.
Well, I think that the term family values has become so narrowed to just a couple of issues, the issue of homosexuality or the issue of abortion, something like that, or the issue of pregnancy outside of marriage. What my book is trying to do is to broaden the concept of what it means to value families in a society and to urge us to begin to understand what sort of economic and political policies you have to support the well-being of families so that families can do what families are needed to do in a society. If a society needs families, not just to reproduce, but to take care of dependent people, to take care of the sick, to take care of elderly parents, to socialize people, to meet our emotional and intimate needs, all of these things, I would like to say, should be as important to us as producing cars or whatever. And we need to be figuring out how do you design an economy that values the work of caregiving that has traditionally been women's work. It is work. It's absolutely essential to a society, but we long time ago divided production of material things from taking care of people. And the result of that, I think, is what we're seeing today, when taking care of people is becoming more and more a burden on families who are struggling time-wise and money-wise simply to survive.
I'm finding this too interesting because I had about 10 more questions and I've got about less than 2 minutes. Gloria Albrecht, how do we move forward? I mean, the forces of the economy, I think most people who intersect with the economy feel pretty atomized. In other words, it's them alone. I mean, and the idea that these international forces of globalization, the U.S. economy, the U.S. government, one family or one person can't take that on.
No, one family, one person, we do what we can do within the context of our particular lives, but it seems to me like we have to first learn what the situation is and begin building alliances with others. I wonder what would have happened in the last election if the Democrats, for example, would have been honest about what's happened to the average family and average worker since the 1970s, including both Republican and Democratic administrations. So looking to see what's happening in European countries, looking to see what answers are in other places, and begin to recognize that we have rights as people to certain basic material necessities.
And just actually, we do have about 30 seconds. You said Europe is a model, for instance.
Well, daycare. In many European countries, that is there for everyone. Health care. Many European countries, that's there for everyone. Pension plans. A month's vacation, the norm for working people in European countries. These are things that give families time with enough money than to do the work of caring for children, dependent people, the sick, and so forth.
Gloria Albrecht, thanks for being with us. Gloria Albrecht's book and more on this, and we've barely scratched the surface. In her book, Hitting Home, Feminist Ethics, Women's Work, and the Betrayal of Family Values. I'll have a link to it on my website, peterwerby.com. Gloria Albrecht, thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
You're listening to WRIF.com. At Treetops, you'll find the space to breathe. Whether your idea of relaxation involves a snowboard and halfpipe, a horse-drawn sleigh, or a deep tissue massage, Treetops Resort is your destination of choice. Come and hit Treetops Slopes, which offer 23 trails and a tubing run, or sit by the fire in Treetops' newly renovated lodge. You can always breathe deeply and find a way to alleviate stress in Treetops Spa. Wrap it up with a stay in one of Treetops' 252 luxurious rooms, including 2 and 3 bedroom condominiums with all the amenities. Treetops is inviting WRIF listeners to enjoy their magnificent facilities with their stay and ski package for just $99 per person per night. Rates are subject to availability. Package includes one night's lodging, full day lift ticket, and complimentary arrival ticket for up to 6 people. Based on double occupancy, requires 2-night minimum stay on certain weekends. Treetops is home to the finest winter recreation facilities in northern Michigan. What are you waiting for? Call Treetops Reservations Line at 1-888-TREETOPS and ask for the WRIF Stay and Ski Special.
There are so many choices in mortgages these days. For the first-time homebuyer and even for experienced homeowners looking simply to refinance, searching for a mortgage can be a frustrating and confusing time. Why not let Financial Independence Mortgage make your financing search easier? Financial Independence Mortgage provides you with all the relevant information about mortgages and will find you the perfect mortgage to fit your personal needs. It's as simple as filling out a one-page application, and Financial Independence won't make you wait long for your approval. Typically, you'll get a response within 24 hours. Get a free quote from all of the top lending institutions so you know you have a fair comparison of what's available to you on the market. You simply can't find a better, more thorough, more personalized way to ensure yourself of getting the best mortgage at the best rate possible. Competitive rates, very fast closing times, and Financial Independence Mortgage can handle exactly the type of mortgage to fit your personal needs, whether or not you have some blemishes on your credit. Find out today the difference Financial Independence Mortgage can make for you at 1-800-784-4761, extension 8888. That's Financial Independence Mortgage, 1-800-784-4761, extension 8888.
Time is running out. Time is running out on the best deal ever on your opportunity to make an investment that can help you make more money, that will change your life forever. Time is running out on your chance to register for Oakland Community College's Winter 2005 semester. Final walk-in registration for winter classes is January 5th, 6th, and 7th. OCC offers thousands of day, night, and weekend classes in literally hundreds of subjects like business, psychology, computer information systems, physics, English, pre-engineering, robotics, and more. If you want to take a giant step to a better life, Oakland Community College is your educational answer. Call 248-341-2340 or visit the website at oaklandcc.edu. Walk-in registration is January 5th, 6th, and 7th at all OCC campuses. Oakland Community College. Get anywhere from here.
Classes begin January 10th. You're listening to WRIF.com.
Hello.
How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
It was an unexpected review of the three messages I left on Drew's voicemail during the final minutes in regulation of the Michigan-Michigan State game.
Hey, Drew, it's Mike. It's 11 minutes left in the fourth, and MSU up 20-10. Could this be it, or could somehow Michigan pull it out in the end against all odds? I don't think so.
October 30th.
Drew, Mike, it is over, my man. Oh, my God. We just ran one all the way in. Whoa. This is unbelievable. There's something like 8 minutes left in the game, I think. I'm going to be a fool and declare it over. 27-10 with 8:43 left in the fourth. This has got to be certain victory.
Revis kicks it, tries to get the big hop. It's free! And he puts it up. Edwards for the tying touchdown. He goes up! He's gone!
Saturday, October 30th.
Well, Drew, look how fast it turned around. Michigan does the usual thing and pulls away from behind. Who would have thought the Spartans would completely, totally, and thoroughly come unglued? You know what? I don't think I'm ever going to support them again, ever. I'm sick and tired of being disappointed. There comes a point where, you know, you support a team until it reaches a point where you're a fool to support them any longer.
Drew and Mike in the morning. Broadcast on the Riff.
101-101.
Riff.
Detroit's rock station, 101 WRIF, and the best radio website in the world, WRIF.com, brings the hottest deals in the Motor City. Make your night in the town even better without hitting your wallet. With the Riff's Dine Online, you are only one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price.
I do everything I can to find out about that as well. Well, we have a return visit by a Detroiter who has talked to us before about his travels on, the cause of peace and social justice. And this time I did absolutely no research whatsoever. And I did so because I realized that I was much like many, many Americans. I know next to nothing about the island of Haiti, except it seems like a terrible, terrible place, a people that just suffer the worst travails where nothing good ever seems to happen. So I thought I would put myself in the exact position as you, the audience. Joining me, who has done so a number of times before, is Detroit area businessman and peace and social justice activist Rudy Simons. Rudy, welcome back to the Peter Werby Show.
Thank you, Peter. It's a pleasure to be here always.
You always, when you've been here have been to just the places of such despair. You've been twice to Iraq, and then the last time we talked, I think it was just a few months ago, you'd been to Colombia, and this time to the island of Haiti. And as you've done frequently, you accompanied the auxiliary bishop of Detroit, Thomas Gumbleton. So welcome back on that basis as well. But tell us some about Haiti. I mean, I think most people would even have trouble locating it in the Caribbean.
Well, in the first place, Peter, if one is interested in human rights, you do not take delegations to Denmark or Sweden.
Right.
You go to places where human rights are in danger, and there's hardly any spot on the face of the earth today, with the exceptions of places like Iraq and Colombia and the occupied territories and in Palestine that that call out for the need for paying attention to human rights. Haiti has a long and sad history which started with a triumphant moment 200 years ago this year. You know, in January, the first week of January this year, Haiti, which occupies one half of an island called Hispaniola, the other, the larger half of it, if one may put it that way, is the Dominican Republic. But on the west side of the island is the Republic of Haiti, which has now existed for 200 years, and it came about as a result of a slave revolt in the end of the 18th century, culminating in 1804, when the French were defeated militarily by a slave uprising, and the French pulled back and went back home to France and said, wash their hands clean of the Western Hemisphere. And that made it possible, as a matter of fact, for Thomas Jefferson to buy for about a dollar and a quarter the whole Louisiana Purchase, because they didn't want anything to do with that in 1803.
That slave revolt, I do know a bit about. I know more about the history of Haiti than I do about its contemporary situation. Sure. Toussaint Louverture.
Well, let me mention, if I can, that following the triumph of the Haitian slaves to establish a new state, the first black democracy, or first black state in the world, the United States, with Jefferson as president, turned its back on Haiti. And why would that be? That's because it was a slave uprising, and the United States was a slave-holding country, and we did not even recognize Haiti for the next 60 years until the Emancipation Proclamation at the end of the Civil War. And Haiti has gotten shabby treatment from the United States for 200 years, including a 19-year invasion of the country in 1915 under Woodrow Wilson, which lasted until 1934 when Franklin Roosevelt pulled the American troops out, but not before they had left an army, National Guard as they called it, but an army which has ever since beaten up on its own people.
Now, the Dominican Republic, which occupies the other half. By the way, my historic note for this was for rock and roll fans. Toussaint Louverture is an incredible instrumental piece by Santana. I believe on the first album, it's an incredible piece. Santana's tribute to the leader of the slave revolt, the success.
Interesting. Toussaint Louverture.
Yeah. You say it better.
I'm not sure any French-speaking people would agree, but.
Rudy Simons is my guest. He's returned from Haiti. Actually, he and Bishop Gumbleton were there in late November and early December. What differentiates the two sides of this big island? It always seems, even though with its problems and with its poverty, the half of the island, the eastern half of Dominican Republic, always seems at least in fairly decent shape. Tourists want to go there. It seems ecologically intact, whereas it seems like almost everything, including the environment, have been destroyed in Haiti.
Yes, that's really quite true. And let me tell you, my first trip to Haiti was as a out-and-out tourist, as a young man, a half a century ago, and I found the island absolutely fascinating, and while it was not exactly an economic model, it was not in the condition that it is in now. It had beautiful timbers growing, and those have all since been cut down and have ravaged the country. My later trips came first during the coup government, which overthrew President Aristide, who had been elected in December of 1990, about 2 days after he had said to his people, it is time for the Haitian workers to have a rise in their minimum wage from 14 cents an hour to 28 cents an hour. 2 days later, 7 months in office in a 5-year term, he was thrown out by a military coup representing the interests of the wealthy families. That's not an uncommon story these days. And he spent the next several years in the United States as, I would say, a guest of our government, but nonetheless, he was a government in exile based in Washington. And he was finally restored a few years later. I think it's important that people know about that. And at least I and many others believe that he was restored to the presidency, having missed 3 years plus of his presidency, because Haitian bodies were washing up on the shores of eastern Florida, and it was a great embarrassment to our government, particularly in light of the fact that at the same time the Cubans were coming to Florida, and the Cubans were immediately released once they landed and delivered as free people into the communities in Florida, in Miami in particular, and the Haitians were put in prison or immediately returned.
So the Cubans, under peculiar American law, have special status. So it's isn't it called dry foot? As soon as you, if you're Cuban, you land here, immediately have refugee status. The Haitians, as you said, Rudy Simons, they were off to these INS, essentially concentration camps, where all sorts of horrors have come to light about their treatment there.
Some of them are still caged, as a matter of fact. Even when they arrived together, as they did on one memorable occasion, because they had come to the Bahamas at the same time, found a boat and came over together to Florida, and the Cubans were released and the Haitians were jailed.
Well, let's talk about your most recent trip that began in late November with Bishop Thomas Gumbleton of Detroit. How does one go to Haiti? Do you just go down to Metro and say, I want a ticket to Port-au-Prince?
Essentially, you can go by commercial airlines to Miami and connect with a flight that takes you to Port-au-Prince. And that's what we did. There were seven of us. And we had a chance to meet with some people who are concerned about human rights, some of them who are documenting human rights abuses. Very, very courageous people, some of them very young.
Tell us, you say you and five others. I mean, what was it was obviously was some grouping from Detroit.
Yes, it had no formal name. The six others beside myself were all members of Bishop Gumbleton's St. Leo Parish in the heart of Detroit. I was the outsider in that respect. Two of the seven of us were there to make connections with the Sister Church of St. Leo's, which is located outside of Port-au-Prince in Haiti, and we were all there to see what we could see following a coup, a second coup, against a twice-elected president, Jean-Bertrand Aristide, which took place on the 29th of February of this year. The U.S. Marines picked up Mr. Aristide at his home and escorted him to a plane, a military plane provided by the United States, and flew him to the Congo, of all places, where he stayed for a little while and then returned to Jamaica. And there were a lot of people, including our government, who were not happy with the idea that he was that close to Haiti, being in Jamaica, and they wanted him out of the Caribbean. And they then escorted him to South Africa, which is where he is living now, and being treated as the legitimate president of Haiti, which he is and should be.
Well, it would almost, if we were looking for a synonym for Haiti, would almost certainly be chaos. And when you got off the plane and started traveling through the city of Port-au-Prince, what were your impressions? What did you see?
Well, that's an important question. The first day was a day of celebration. I can't go into the complete story of it, but there was a man who had been a friend of President Aristide's. He's a Catholic priest in Haiti and probably represents the voice of nonviolence and human rights better than anybody else in Haiti today. His name is Father Gerard Jean Just. And on the 13th of October, he was picked up while he was supervising his church's giving out of meals to 600 poor children and about 200 adults at his church, or at least a facility very near his church, by thugs. Some of them were actually national police. Others were dressed completely in black with masks on, who came in, captured him, and not that it took there was any struggle, put handcuffs on him so tightly that they broke a bone in his wrist, and threw him out of a window onto the cement pavement outside of the building, cutting him up, and shot three of those children who were being fed, and put him in jail on the grounds that he had some connection with a couple of murders, unspecified, no witnesses, no specifics, and they kept him in jail for 47 days, and there was a worldwide complaint about what they had done, including a few people like Bishop Gumbelton in the United States, although the U.S. press barely touched it. Amnesty International did, and other organizations. And within a couple of hours of our arrival there in November, he was released from prison, and there was jubilation not only among his own parishioners who prepared a marvelous thing for him the following day, but worldwide from people who were involved in lobbying for his release. That was the good news. But in the days that followed, Colin Powell made a visit for a few hours to the palace in Port-au-Prince, and there were awful, awful events in Port-au-Prince that day, including the shooting of 15 young boys, probably between the ages of 12 and 15, who came from a school a couple of blocks from the National Palace where Colin Powell was visiting. And we visited with some of them in the hospital as they were brought in. And later that very same night, there was a shooting in the National Penitentiary in which the guards shot and killed at least seven of the prisoners, and we don't know the details of that.
Well, Rudy Simons, this just increases mine, I'm sure many listeners' sense of what I just said earlier, that this all seems chaos. Who's arresting who? Shooting who? What?
Well, those are the right questions. Yeah. Those are the right questions to ask. There is in place now a government regarded by the people who supported Aristide, which is about 80% of the population, as a coup government. There was a coup d'etat at the end of February. And the leader now in place running this so-called government is a man named Gerard Latortue, who is an exceedingly wealthy Haitian who has been living in Haiti, living in Florida for the last, I think, 16 or 17 years, who was more or less appointed by the U.S. government to come back and take charge of this group now who is running the country. And it's just a terrible, terrible stroke of, I was going to say, ill luck. It was not ill luck. It was a continuation of America's unfortunate policy toward Haiti, which leans in the direction of those few who have everything and against the interests of those who have practically nothing.
What is the role of the United States down there now? Isn't there some peacekeeping force, either through the Organization of American States or just the United States itself?
United Nations is there now, largely at the behest of the United States, France, and Canada. Now, that's rather remarkable. France and Canada both have, one, of course, is French-speaking, one is partially French-speaking. And so they've had an interest in Haiti, which is French-speaking, at least among its elite and literate, though it speaks Creole as its basic language. And they are backing this coup government, which has done its best to overturn almost anything done in the interests of the people by Jean-Bertrand Aristide during his presidency. Just for instance, they've cut back on the literacy programs, they've cut back on the health care centers. The medical school, which was established by Aristide during his second term just a couple of years ago and was turning out doctors in Haiti, maybe for the first time, during the time of the coup, the medical school was kicked out entirely and it's now a barracks for soldiers. I mean, and that kind of typifies the kinds of things that have been happening.
Well, the accusations against Aristide, as I remember, and as I said, if you're just joining us, listeners, I said that I didn't do any research. And so depending on the mainstream press, this all pretty much disappears from one's view. Rudy Simon's my guest on the Peter Werbe Show, accompanied Bishop Thomas Gumbleton and five others from Detroit on a fact-finding tour just recently, within the last month or so. And so it almost seems like this type of activity, the shootings, the violence, the overthrows, is just endemic to that region.
Not true.
Yeah. Okay.
Not true. It's an idea put out by our government, which is unfortunate, because Haitians have had periods when they have been at peace, as any people will be if they're given a chance to enjoy peace. But the fact is that the day our present president took over, all funding toward Haiti from the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund and U.S. aid was cut off 100%, just totally removed, although our government, and we visited the embassy, tells us, well, we cut off aid to the government, but we gave it directly to the people. The people they gave it to was a group called the Democratic Convergence, which are a combination of all the parties which were opposed to Lavalas, President Aristide's party, but which never, in any election, got more, totally, all these parties, than 12% of the vote. And those are the people that we were supplying. And we sponsored, the whole world believes, except the U.S. Embassy does not, we sponsored the armament of the troops that overthrew Aristide this past February, training them and arming them in the Dominican Republic, from which they came in February, started to create chaos, killing people. The police that Aristide had in place and anybody who was his follower, and took over the government in clearly a coup d'etat.
Well, this sounds like something the United States did during the 1950s or the 1960s, something that we thought that the United States, as foreign policy, had moved away from. Now we're supposed to be establishing democracy all across the world. The charges against Aristide are, and I'm not quite sure who's even making these, that he was, in fact, undemocratic, that he had allowed all this violence to break out. But that's section A of the question. Section B is, what would the United States want there? This is a country made almost entirely desolate. What was Aristide doing that would move the United States to do all this?
Aristide represented, in the terms of Oxfam, if you know the agency Oxfam, based in Great Britain, the danger of a good example. It was used first in connection with Nicaragua, but it applies to Haiti as well. If, indeed, a popular leader who has the interests of his people in mind is elected, and those who have always owned everything and collect every penny there is to collect in the country, a tiny handful, are not in charge, it represents a danger of a good example in that other countries might follow it. I'll tell you who does not support this new government, in quotes, and that is CARICOM, the Caribbean community, which has remained principled, as has the African Union, in saying we do not recognize this new government which the United States has put in place.
Rudy Simons, I can't believe how quickly time is going. Tell us some about your experiences there, the people that you've met. What stands out in terms of the most hopeful, the most poignant, the most distressing?
Well, let me mention in particular, because time is short, a new group which was founded only since the coup, a group that had been working in Haiti in behalf of the people, but after the coup could no longer work in the same way. They organized a group called the Institute for Democracy, for Justice and Democracy in Haiti. And we met a young woman who was raised in Chicago, 24 years old, who speaks English, French, Creole, and I don't know what other languages, and is working in a most courageous way to document human rights abuses in Haiti today, going into the poorest neighborhoods where people are truly suffering and literally starving. And she goes in those areas which our embassies and others say are very, very dangerous, and talks to the people who are there and makes notes and reports to the international community. So that is one of those very few sparks of hope for Haiti right now.
Mm-hmm. We I usually ask you this on your trips, like to Colombia and in Iraq. Were there times that you were at danger? I mean, did you hear gunfire?
We were close enough to gunfire that we saw the victims of it brought in a couple of blocks to that hospital. But that's about it. We were actually in a municipal jail where we watched youngsters brought in off the streets of the poor neighborhoods, crowded together, 38 in about 120, 130 square feet, 38 of them, some as young as 13 years old. It's a brutal, dangerous situation with very little justice, very little concern for the most needy people in Haiti, and it's something that we'll have to change and we'll have to try to tell people about so they can help us change it.
Where is their food coming from? All the photographs I see, there seems like farming has almost disappeared.
There is still farming, but not what there used to be. They used to grow rice and sugar for export. Following the coup in 1990, the United States offered subsidies to the growers in the United States of rice and sugar, and now you see women walking around with big gunny sacks on their heads saying sugar or rice made in the U.S., so they stopped growing it in Haiti. They undercut the market.
Yeah, and ecologically, you were there, you said, 50 years ago. What were the differences?
Well, the difference, although I can't say I saw it so much with my own eyes, are the fact that the hardwood forests and the valuable lumber has been stripped from the hills by foreign interests, and now the great disaster that befell the city of Gonaive during the recent hurricane in October, I think, and cost about 3,000 lives in that one area, is a result of the stripping of forests. Yeah. And we were told that had that not happened, there would have been virtually no damage and very few lives lost in that event. So you're right. The agriculture and the timber industry have been destroyed in Haiti, and there's very little of any great substance that the Haitians can hold on to.
Rudy Simons, you've been over the last couple of years to Iraq, to Colombia, to Haiti, and on one hand, you always seem to have this hope and look for the most hopeful signs, and I think you always get this sort of to the end of our interviews, and I always have this feeling of hopelessness in many ways. It eventually, things will correct itself, but in the short run, so many people are hurt, so many people are dying, so many people starve, so many people are victims of war. What keeps you going?
The fact that the only thing you can't do is nothing. I think you're right. You have to look for the signs of hope and try to contribute to them.
Yeah, and is there anything we can do as Detroiters? You've gotten the information. You've brought
this.
Yes,
I and others would be happy to talk to other groups about what we saw there so we can widen the circle of people who are aware of what things are like in Haiti and appeal to the good sensibilities of the American people who would not want to see that happen and might help change policies in that direction.
Can people get a hold of you, Wade, and talk about this in advance through the Michigan Coalition for Human Rights?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
That's it. For one thing, folks, you can go online, mchr.org, and I'll have that link on my website, peterwerby.com, as well. Rudy Simons, thanks for having joined me.
Thanks to you, Peter.
You're listening to WRIF.com.
There are so many choices in mortgages these days. For the first-time homebuyer and even for experienced homeowners looking simply to refinance, searching for a mortgage can be a frustrating and confusing time. Why not let Financial Independence Mortgage make your financing search easier? Financial Independence Mortgage provides you with all the relevant information about mortgages and will find you the perfect mortgage to fit your personal needs. It's as simple as filling out a one-page application, and Financial Independence won't make you wait long for your approval. Typically, you'll get a response within 24 hours. Get a free quote from all of the top lending institution so you know you have a fair comparison of what's available to you on the market. You simply can't find a better, more thorough, more personalized way to ensure yourself of getting the best mortgage at the best rate possible. Competitive rates, very fast closing times, and Financial Independence Mortgage can handle exactly the type of mortgage to fit your personal needs, whether or not you have some blemishes on your credit. Find out today the difference Financial Independence Mortgage can make for you at 1-800-784-4761, extension 8888. That's Financial Independence Mortgage, 1-800-784-4761, extension 8888.
At Treetops, you'll find the space to breathe. Whether your idea of relaxation involves a snowboard and half pipe, a horse-drawn sleigh, or a deep tissue massage, Treetops Resort is your destination of choice. Come and hit Treetops Slopes, which offer 23 trails and a tubing run, or sit by the fire in Treetops' newly renovated lodge. You can always breathe deeply and find a way to alleviate stress in Treetops Spa. Wrap it up with a stay in one of Treetops' 252 luxurious rooms, including 2 and 3 bedroom condominiums with all the amenities. Treetops is inviting WRIF listeners to enjoy their magnificent facilities with their stay and ski package for just $99 per person per night. Rates are subject to availability. Package includes one night's lodging, full day lift ticket, and complimentary arrival ticket for up to 6 people. Based on double occupancy, requires 2 night minimum stay on certain weekends. Treetops is home to the finest winter recreation facilities in northern Michigan. What are you waiting for? Call Treetops Reservations Line at 1-888-TREETOPS and ask for the WRIF Stay and Ski Special.
Time is running out. Time is running out on the best deal ever on your opportunity to make an investment that can help you make more money, that will change your life forever. Time is running out on your chance to register for Oakland Community College's Winter 2005 semester. Final walk-in registration for winter classes is January 5th, 6th, and 7th. OCC offers thousands of day, night, and weekend classes in literally hundreds of subjects like business, psychology, computer information systems, physics, English, pre-engineering, robotics, and more. If you want to take a giant step to a better life, Oakland Community College is your educational answer. Call 248-341-2340 or visit the website at oaklandcc.edu. Walk-in registration is January 5th, 6th, and 7th at all OCC campuses. Oakland Community College. Get anywhere from here.
Classes begin January 10th. This is WRIM.com.
Detroit's rock station, 101 WRIF, and the best radio website in the world, WRIF.com, brings the hottest deals in the Motor City. Make your night in the town even better without hitting your wallet. With the Riffs, dine online. You are only one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price. Dine online and eat for less with WRIF.com. The Riff presents your opportunity to save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants, like Tito Ristorante on Erie Street in Windsor. If it's not on the menu, Tito's chefs will custom make entrees to your liking. Log on to www.wrif.com. You can purchase full-price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price. But quantities are limited, so you'd better act fast. It's all from the station that delivers you more. 101 The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com. Check out special offers and savings for Motor City businesses. Like Buddy's, one of the nation's 5 best pizza places as recognized by the Food Network, invites you to book your holiday party now at any of their 9 metro area locations. Dine in or take out. Buddy's Pizza is number 1 in Detroit. Log on today and save with Detroit's rock station at WRIF.com.
When it's 5 o'clock, it's time to rock with the Riff.
Weekday afternoons at 5, right here on 101 WRIF.
Your ride home rocks with Big Daddy Arthur P. Playing your Riff Rockin' Request. Call in your Riff Rockin' Request to the Grand Poobah at 313-298-WRIF.
Email them to ArthurP at WRIF.com.
Hell, you can even fax them in before you ditch the office at 248-398-6219. Call for the tunes that you want to hear. Win yourself some killer Riff swag and let the ride home rock with the Riff's own Big Daddy Arthur Penalo.
Riff is the only station letting you pick your favorites and program the station 3 times a day at noon, 5, and 9.
It's your all-request Riff Rock and Ride Home with...